and everybody, and everybody platform. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to show my face because I'm in a place where I don't think it's going to be fine. Let me disclose, I was a bit panicking this morning. I thought I've got a problem with network. I have to be citizen servant. Only to find out Mr. Background. No age catches up with you. I don't have that. So I had to buy data so that I'm able to be. But I'm here in the presence of Parliament. My apologies for that. And in welcoming everybody, we are all coming from a very strenuous period, a period where a period that has been very stressful to all of us, ourselves as members of various political parties, our citizenship. Because everybody was hectic this time around. But we are happy that we have gone through that, past that, without any challenges. We are then back to our business, which is committee work. Our first presentation is then going to be is the Office of the Auditor General. That is then going to take us through. But before that, let's have a roll call from Mr. Sakaza, who is here and who is not here, and the reason for people not being here, in particular members of Parliament, members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Sakaza.
Morning, Chair, and good morning to all the members of the committee and the minister and the department. Good morning. Chair, today we have from the members of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Chair Dunjwa. We've got Honorable Zuma, Honorable Ndabe, Honorable Nontsele, Honorable Begram, Honorable Kado, Honorable Yinana, Honorable Nkondo, Honorable Dena. I'm still looking for others maybe to still join in, Chair. From the support staff, we have myself, committee secretary. We've got Poshia, the committee assistant. We've got Mr. Ngobo, the content advisor, and Mr. Teboho Mukwena, the researcher, and we also have Mr. Sibongile Maphuthi, the communications officer. Thank you, Chair, from my side. I didn't receive any apologies so far, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we have a from the department before we go to the AG?
Good morning, Chairperson, and the honorable members. From the department, we have the Deputy Minister, and we have the Minister. I haven't seen him, but I think he's also here. We also have the COO of the department, Ms. Marsha Bronkhorst, and we have the DDG responsible for Inspection and Enforcement Services, Ms. Eki Moilwa. We have the DDG responsible for corporate services, Ms. Bahumi Matevesi. We have the CFO of the department, Mr. Peki Matuna. We have the director of the CCMA, Mr. Cameron Morajana. And we have the support staff in the DM's office, Ms. Karabo Makakane. We have We have the ED of NEDLAC, Ms. Lisa Sechtel. We have Nobuntu Sibisi from NEDLAC. And we have, I suppose, Sabelo is from the minister's office, Mr. Mali. He's just registered himself as Sabelo, not Sabelo Mali. We have the parliamentary liaison officer, Mr. Tando Wababa, the acting DDG labor market policy, Mr. Tebu Ngosim Kalipi, and we have the head of the DM's office, Mr. Muweli, and we have the chief of staff, Kangala Mutumela. We will also be joined, Chair, by the CEO of Productivity South Africa. I haven't seen him in the list of people that are here. Also, the CEO of the Supported Employment Enterprises, Mr. Packard, you will also be joining. I haven't seen him yet. Together with the CFO of the SCE, I have not seen her here as well. Also, the DDG Public Employment Services, Mr. Samu Rotoba, will also be joining. I also haven't seen him here. And Mr. Musa Zondi, the spokesperson of the department, will also be joining. Chair likes to ask who's Musa Z. If you see Musa Z, it's Mr. Musa Zondi. So, thanks, Chairperson.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. Before we allow the Office of the AG to introduce itself and then do the presentation, I see the minister is here. Welcome, Minister. Can we have an overview, a political overview, and good morning, DM, and then we'll then request then the office of the AG to make the introductions and subsequently go into the presentation. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, the Honorable Chair and members of the committee, the Deputy Minister, the DG, senior management, senior executives of the department and the entities. And thank you to the committee for this opportunity. And I always say it, Chairperson, that as the Dell family, we take very seriously the oversight or the oversight role of the legislature, holding us as executives and officials to account. My role is just to flag the major items whilst management presents the details of the annual reports for the financial year 2020-2021. These reports are indicative of the effects of COVID-19, not just to the country and the world, but specifically to the labor market world over. They are also an indication of how we've been tested, our responsiveness, our resilience, and as well as our weaknesses. The AG's findings we've heard from the AG, and the findings are something of a mixed bag. We've equally responded to all these findings with agility that is required. And a sign that Dell and its entities have taken these findings very seriously. And I do believe that there is a serious commitment to up our game across the Dell family in this respect. This was evidenced at the strategic planning session we held at the beginning of the month, which was preceded by the government or governance lekhutla. That is our governance. The focus of the lekhutla was the governance and compliance, as well as addressing the AG's findings. And the outcomes included detailed action plans and key commitments from each branch and entity. I should mention that the plans were developed in consultation with the office of the AG. And equally important, the development of the framework for reporting. Framework for monitoring and even implementation on the frequent and regular basis to quality assure all transactions. On the Dell's annual report, Dell achieved an unqualified audit with matters of emphasis, matters which need to be addressed include the large number of ICT findings, the cybersecurity and underutilization of licenses. These matters were addressed at the strat plan session, but they remain a priority in resolving, as ICT is an engine to all our operations. The SCM findings, pointing to the need for strengthened contract management, proper procurement planning, and implementation, as well as diligence in applying the SCM regulations. An increase in irregular expenditure, which is unfortunate. The department overall annual performance as at the 31st March 2021 was at 66%. The 2021 financial year has seen a decrease of 13% in overall performance compared to 2019-2020. And the main reasons for underperformance was the COVID pandemic and the hard lockdown, which we imposed during the first quarter and the second quarter of 2021 financial year. On the supported employment enterprises, the SMEs, as you see, the entity incurred a deficit during 2021 and had to be bailed out. It also seriously underperformed on targets. The entity received a qualified audit opinion for 2021 financial year. Areas of repeat findings resulted in the qualified opinion on the inventory and cost of sales on assets, on assets and their services in kind. So the areas of improvement from 2019-2020 annual financial statements over the cash flow statement and performance information. Our recent strat plan session for 2021 was very much seized with this matter, and this is a major initiative to support workers with disabilities, and we cannot let them down. And I'm pleased to be able to tell you that this SCE permanent senior management has now been appointed with a vision to address the negative audit findings and to place the entity on a sustainable footing. And from our side, with the Deputy Minister and the DG, we will continue to pursue the need to have disabilities recognized for purposes of preferential procurement from public entities. On the CCMA, despite the challenges of the pandemic, lockdown and budget cuts, the CCMA continued to make meaningful contribution towards the labor peace and equity with a total of 84% performance of the planned APP targets achieved. What stands out what stands out in these difficult times is the CCMA's job saving efforts, which saw 58,000 jobs saved of the 75,000 jobs at risk of retrenchment. We take the view that labor peace and equity is even more important during the turbulent socioeconomic conditions we are going through. The CCMA has responded creatively to budget cuts, changing the way it does business, with a greater emphasis on what we call online referrals and processes, which also speak to the COVID protocols, as well as use of shared premises to reduce the rental bill. From the side of Dell family, we've sought to make savings to transfer to support the work of the CCMA. The CCMA received an unqualified opinion from the Auditor General with one material finding and nine internal control deficiency findings. Corrective measures are being implemented on network. Network has been central in coordinating the response of the social partners in addressing the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic recovery and reconstruction of our country. If there was any question on the relevance of network, I hope the committee have made their observation, especially in this COVID-19 period. In particular, NETREC has coordinated the United Trade response to relief or to relief for laid off employees, unemployed, and even the vulnerable citizens. Workplace health and safety regulation, as well as workplace rollout of vaccination. And they have also recreated the platform. They've recreated the platform for social dialogue. And it's very clear that in the landlord that there's still a lot which has to go for social dialogue at the level of NETLEC. NETLEC received an unqualified report with findings for which the remedial action has been taken. No findings were received in respect of the performance information. Let me reiterate that in times of crisis, social dialogue and strong, trusted institutions such as NETLEC are invaluable. And just the last one, which is productivity, South Africa. Given the recorded low productivity and competitiveness of the South African economy, productivity is also well placed to assist the company in this respect. It has played a role in the normal test funding. I will, Chairperson, however, leave all the details account to the senior officials. Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity, and my apologies for taking long.
Thank you, Minister. Ms. Kay, can you introduce your team, and then after that, you start your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to you, the Honorable Members, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, the DG of the Department, as well as the colleagues from both the Department and the entity. Chairperson, this morning I'm joined by Ms. Michelle Magerman. She's the Deputy Business Executive overseeing the labor portfolio. She's also joined by Ms. Bulelwa Skweya. She's the Senior Manager for the Labor as a Department. I also have in the background Ms. Zamahla Ngumdijwa, the Senior Manager that's responsible for CCMA. I also have Mr. Maseko, who's responsible for the network. In the presentation, Honorable Chairperson and the members, we're bringing all the entities that would have been finalized within the portfolio, with an exception of the UIF and the Compensation Fund. They submitted the financial statements between the 31st of July and the 30th of September, which was a bit late. So we are still busy with those audits. We are hoping that will finalize. We are at an advanced stage of the compensation fund, but I think the UIF, there's still a lot of work that we need to do. in the PAG, you would remember last year when we came to the committee, there's a couple of things we highlighted, and amongst them we said we couldn't conclude or at least express an opinion on the predetermined objectives of the department, and which meant that we disclaimed the AOPO or the performance information of the Department of Labor that went in time. And you would see in the current year, they managed to at least submit the supporting documentation to the larger extent, and therefore they would have moved a notch up. We were able to express an opinion and we were able to put them on the qualified. So not a good thing, but they're on the right track so far as performance information, just building the reliability of the information is concerned. The NECLEC, a highlight is that the financial statement did not contain material errors. We're very encouraged by the work that they've done, and we are hoping that they can build on that. And a client or an auditee like CCMA, we are very hopeful about them. I think they are on the right track. There's just a few matters on the financial statement that we need to close, and obviously just make sure that the predetermined objectives are complete. But I think CCMA is also on the right track as well. So I think if you look at the portfolio that we are bringing, there's still a lot of work to be done on the department and the SEE in particular. But I think they seems to have jotted the right part. And what is left is the implementation of all of the controls that they had set for themselves. So with your permission, Chairperson, I wanted to allow Michelle to do the presentation. And then at the end of the presentation, we'll just appreciate some of the comments and questions that may come through from the honorable members. Michelle, if you could just share the screen. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Over to you, Michelle.
Thank you, Cabo. I hope you can see my screen.
Please put it on a flat mode, please.
Yes. There we go. Okay, great. Thank you and good morning, honorable members and the honorable minister and the department and the management of the entities. Good morning. I will take you through the audit outcomes for the portfolio. Let me start with our mission. Our mission is that we are the constitutional supreme audit institution of South Africa, and we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. And giving you these audit outcomes, we hope that it will also empower you to enable you to do your oversight role. In terms of the AGSA and the Portfolio Committee, I won't spend too much time here. In terms of our mandate, it comes from the Constitution, as well as we have our Public Audit Act, in which we audit against. We also extended our powers, which you'll find in Section 5.1b, where we are now able to take has the power to take remedial action where accounting officers authorities have failed to comply with the recommendations that we have provided. We also included the National Assembly rule in terms of the portfolio committees, which I'm not going to spend time on. In terms of our role as the AGSA in the reporting process, our role as the AGSA is to reflect on the audit work performed to assist Portfolio Committee in its oversight role of assessing the performance of entities, taking into consideration the committee's objective to produce the BRRR report. What we understand as the role of oversight, I will start from my right on, where we say that it is to obtain reports on investigations conducted into transgressions and irregularities and affecting entities, follow up annually on previous commitments made by accounting officer, determine if corrective steps are taken to address shortcomings in internal control environment, inquire what training and support is given to officials to enable them to correctly execute their responsibilities, follow up on actions taken against officials responsible for transgressions, hold executive authorities accountable for failures in control environment, and use reports tabled on progress with material irregularities to oversee and influence progress made by public bodies with investigations and executive authorities, and use information in the audit report on material irregularities for accountability and oversight purposes, insisting on timeless implementation of recommendations. And you'll see some of these we've aligned with the recommendations at the end of the presentation that we are requesting the committee to follow up on with the departments and the entities. In terms of the focus of the presentation, I will just give a summary of what type of audit outcomes that we do give when we do the audit, when we give the audit report. We have the clean audit, which is the unqualified opinion with no findings, and that's usually represented by the green. And this means that the financial statements are free from error and there's no findings on compliance or the performance report. In terms of the unqualified opinion with findings, here we give an opinion where your financial statements are free from error, but you have findings on either both or one of the two, the performance reporting or the compliance with regulation. Then we also have the qualified opinion where we say that there is an area in the financial statement that has errors, either one or two or a few errors, where we say that these errors have errors in them. And you'll also have you'll probably have a compliance finding, or you'll have both the compliance and the performance information finding. In terms of adverse opinion, here we say that there's quite a few areas in the financial statements that have errors, and they could not be corrected. And then here we have a disclaimed opinion where we say we could not obtain sufficient evidence to audit your financial statement. I am, for the entities that I'm reporting for today, the adverse and disclaimed opinions we don't have. In terms of the portfolio outcomes, I will be going through the outcomes for the CCMA, for NEDLAC, for the department, as well as SCE. The UIF and the CF, these audits are not yet finalized. Productivity SA is not audited by the AGSA. It is a Section 43 audit, and they have their own auditors. In terms of the outcomes of the portfolio for the four entities, you will see that the portfolio has not necessarily improved in terms of the outcomes. I will highlight, though, that even though some of the areas have not improved, we do see a movement in terms of them moving in the right direction in implementing some of the controls. You'll see that the department, CCMA, and NEDLAC are unqualified with findings, and SCE has remained with the qualified audit opinion. In terms of breaking down what gave rise to some of the findings, in terms of the quality of financial statements, NEDLAC submitted financial statements that did not have any material misstatements, so they didn't even have to correct anything, which we commend the entity. I think they are doing well and should be able to fix some of the other areas so that they can move to the clean category. In terms of the DAO and SCE and CCMA, they had material adjustments to the financial statement, and they needed to tighten up some of the review processes that are required before submitting the financial statement. SCE had material misstatements in the financial statements. Unfortunately, they were unable to correct these, resulting in the qualified audit opinion. The CCMA, SCE, and DAO, they've managed to correct these material adjustments. Therefore, that's why they have the unqualified opinion. In terms of the performance reporting, we are encouraged that we did not have findings on usefulness for all the entities in the portfolio. And we have seen improvement in terms of the quality of the submitted performance reports in the portfolio. SCE and NEDLAC, they submitted annual financial reports that were free from material misstatements, so no errors were identified in their reports. In terms of the department, we had quite a few material misstatements, and like Kabo had indicated, the department previously, we could not audit the performance report. There was quite a lot of limitations. but this year we were able to audit, that we could see information. And fortunately, the information that was submitted for audit did not always tie up to what was reported in the achievement. And mainly we are attributing this to the manual process that is still, the department is still utilizing in order to accumulate information from the provinces into head office. We know that from discussions with the department and their responses to us that there is a system that is being implemented, that has been developed. Unfortunately, it is taking quite a while to get all the provinces together and making sure that they utilize this. They need to be trained. The system also needs to be configured a little bit better so that when the reports are generated, they are all aligned. We've raised some of these findings.
Sorry, ma'am. I don't know whether it's my screen. I don't have the presentation on the screen. I don't know whether it's only affecting me. And if it's only me, my apologies. I'll try and see how best can I.
Can I have an indication if you can see, if anyone can see my screen?
I can see.
All right. No, thank you so much. I am on page 12 of the presentation. Okay. I was just elaborating more on the department performance reporting. That the department must strengthen or must finalize the implementation of their system, make sure that it's configured well, make sure the training is done so that their performance reporting is more automated rather than the manual. In terms of the CCMA, we did have some findings in terms of the CCMA. We did have findings in terms of the CCMA. However, they were able to correct their performance report. I'm going to just go a bit into detail in terms of the financial statements, the credibility of the financial statements. So if you look at the root causes, I am only focusing on the CCMA, the DAL, and the ECE, as NEDLAC did not have material misstatements. In terms of the CCMA, we did identify on the commitments register that not all payments were taken into account when determining the future commitment balance. This was adjusted by the entity. In terms of the department, we did identify quite a few material misstatements in terms of intangible assets, capital commitments, the disclosure of key management personnel, operating leases. And here we're saying that the schedules that were submitted did not support the financial statements. They had a few errors in them and they needed to be corrected. The department was able to correct and therefore the financial statements are unqualified. The SEE, if you look at the error that's indicating where we identified, we raised errors, qualification errors in cost of sales and the inventory, the property, plant and equipment, and in services in kind, which impacted some other areas like revenue and expenditure as well as the cash flow statement. So those were the qualification areas. And if you look there, I'm just elaborating there to say that the cost of sales and the inventory, the costing of the cost of sales as well as the inventory, we found various areas, errors. And management had indicated that it is mainly that the system that they're utilizing does not record transactions as required by the GRAP standard. However, we are saying that management should have implemented processes then even outside the system to be able to perform reconciliation so that they make sure that they comply with the reporting framework. In terms of property, plant and equipment, there were assets that are sitting as one rand that need to be, we need to assess their remaining useful life. And give them the fair value that they are if they're still being utilized. In terms of services in kind, this mainly relates to buildings that the entity is utilizing. These buildings are being paid, the department is paying for these buildings on their behalf. the standards require that this service in kind, you need to assess the fair value and you need to disclose that fair value. And thus, we did not see this assessment coming through from the SCE. And those are the qualification areas that came through. The recommendations we're giving them is that the underlying schedules that support the financial statements must be adequately prepared and reviewed to support the amounts disclosed. Senior management must adequately review the financial statements before submission for audit. And also effective monitoring is critical to ensure that repeat findings are prevented in the next financial year. And we request that the SCE must implement these daily and monthly monitoring controls to ensure that the financial statements meet the requirements of the GRAP standards. In terms of performance reporting, I will focus on the CCMA and the department. The CCMA, we did identify some errors in terms of supporting documentation from regional offices, and here we're saying strengthen your review processes in terms of what is being submitted by regional offices and what is being consolidated. For the department, we are elaborating on the fact that the manual process, if the registers are still being performed, there must be reviews there. But we are saying that the automation of this process must be urgently implemented and so that the process is a little more seamless. In terms of compliance with legislation, we raised a few areas in terms of compliance in the annual financial statements where there were material adjustments made to the financial statements. This is a non-compliance with the PFMA. So that was our first non-compliance that we've raised at Dell, CCMA, and SCE. In terms of procurement and contract management for SCE, we identified that when
sorry
the SCE...
Sorry for that. Can Honorable Zuma please mute? Can she please mute? Because she's disturbing. There's a noise that is disturbing the meeting. You may continue,
Thank you. In terms of ECE on procurement and contract management, we identified that the bid documentations or even the adverts do not stipulate the minimum threshold for local production. And this is a requirement by legislation. Expenditure management, there is irregular expenditure at Dell and NEDLAC that we've identified. In terms of consequence management, here we identified it mainly at the department in SCE, where we could not determine that the disciplinary steps have been taken against officials that incurred irregular expenditure. And then in terms of revenue management, there are quite a few debtors at SCE that we're saying that they need to be collected, and also interest must be charged for these debtors. I'm going to elaborate a bit more in terms of these compliance areas. In terms of irregular expenditure, the irregular expenditure did increase for the portfolio. In the main, it's the irregular expenditure of 27 million by the department, where the IT contract was extended above the limits of 15 million, which then requires to go to National Treasury. This irregular was identified by the department themselves and disclosed. We confirmed the amount. There were errors for the amount that was disclosed. However, the financial statements have the correct amount at this stage. In terms of the CCMA, this comes from prior year irregular expenditure, mainly on the building that the building. One of the buildings the CCMA is occupied, where in the previous years it was the contract was signed without following procurement processes. This expenditure, as it goes on, it must be disclosed as irregular expenditure until the CCMA then corrects or the contract is expired. In terms of the SCE, there was also some non-compliances in terms of SEM processes that were identified in the prior. In the current year, the local content guidelines that were not followed also resulted in irregular expenditure. In NEDLAC also identified this irregular expenditure where they've entered into about 7 contracts where they did not advertise, and we could not get the support as well. In terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it did decrease. So this year we're sitting at around 2 million. Mainly the 700,000 is on the de-scoping of the IT-related projects, where SCE was included in the project, the IT project. However, there should have been a proper assessment, as SCE was not able then to fund the project and should not have been included in the project in the first place. In terms of the next one is also an SCE. So we identified that there was assets that were written off, as there were a lack of controls in inventory that was dispatched, and the SCE could not locate where that inventory ended up. In terms of consequence management, the department does the consequence. They have a section that does the that does perform the investigation. However, we could not identify that the disciplinary steps were taken. So it is key that there must be proper record keeping, and as the investigation is unfolding and as conclusions are being reached, we need to see that disciplinary steps are taken against officials that have given rise to some of the irregular expenditure. In terms of the supply chain management, although for the current year you'll see that CCMA does not have any that we identified, the irregular is coming from the prior year. In terms of the department and NEDLAC, here we're talking about the some of the written quotations not being obtained, and then for SCE, the local content, again we are emphasizing on this presentation. In terms of our amended Public Audit Act in the material irregularities, we have not implemented, we have not phased in our amended PAA for the entities that I've presented. We have phased it in for the compensation fund and the UIF. And when we come and we present the audit outcomes, we will also then highlight any of the material irregularities that we have been identified. But for these entities that are presented, they have not. We have not phased it in. But for the committees, to highlight the committee, our amended PAA. Here we look at findings after the audit or during the audit. We look at the type of finding that is being raised, and we say that does it meet this definition of material irregularity. And the definition I've put up there, it is non-compliance with or contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty identified during the audit performed under this act, under our act, and it is likely or is likely to result in immaterial financial loss, the misuse or loss of material public resources, or substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. So therefore, it's important that for all the irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the entities must assess against this definition and make sure that consequence management and the investigations are performed and make sure that they do deal with any of those items and recover any losses that might have been incurred. In terms of governance and internal controls, here we're looking at the assurance providers, and we're saying how are they performing. And if you look at the graph, you'll see quite a lot of yellow in terms of providing some assurance. We have highlighted in terms of the review process of management, the oversight role of the accounting officer in the preparation of the financial statements and the performance reports. We are highlighting that SCE, we are saying it's a red. The management and the SCE must take an effort in preparing the financial statements and providing the assurance that they are required to provide. If you look at the next one, it also talks about the effective internal controls. Here we're looking at the different areas in terms of proper record keeping, daily and monthly controls, and the review and monitor compliance. And here we are saying that the way we're seeing the yellows, we're saying you need to strengthen these controls to make sure that the financial statements and performance reports are free from error. In terms of IT governance, here we are highlighting in terms of the governance, the IT governance and the IT system and the controls there. We are highlighting mainly some of the areas that we've identified, some weaknesses have been identified. And if you look at the yellow, this is where we're saying that the department needs to focus on these areas in terms of IT governance. We are saying to the department, look at the step license that you are paying for, and if assess whether these are underutilized, as this could result in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We are aware that the system is still in implementation phase, but we've given them quite a few licenses that we're saying relook at them, as we are seeing that they could be underutilized. In terms of the system, the case management system, and this also links to the performance information system that is currently being implemented to say it is being there is poor utilization, and this must be resolved, and the system should be working. They must make sure that the system is working and is implemented throughout the provinces. In terms of physical access and environmental management, here we didn't identify any weaknesses. In terms of IT service continuity, the disaster recovery plan must be finalized so that if there is a disaster, the department and its entities impacted know what to do. In terms of user access management, we identified some weaknesses over the user account management, where we're saying that where there is people that are not supposed to be on the system, so if you've resigned, you must be removed immediately. In terms of this one, I am aware in the responses that the department have given us that they have already integrated your personnel as well as their own internal system, so that when you are terminated in the one, you're also terminated in the other. In terms of program management, here we're saying that there must be logs. So if there's a change in a program or something in your system, there must be a log, and this log must be monitored so that somebody checks every month to say that these are the changes that were made to the program. Are these authorized? Do they agree with the committee, the IT committee, in terms of the changes that have been authorized? In terms of the recommendations, we've given the department and the entities that they must review the licenses that are underutilized. They must analyze the quantity of the financial impact on project delays and subsequent extensions on the project that they're implementing, and they must develop a disaster recovery plan in line with the business continuity plan of the department and its entities. The portfolio snapshot is just a summary of what I've already indicated. The root causes that the three main root causes that I'm highlighting is that there must be adequate review and monitoring controls over preparation of financial statements and annual performance reports. The entities were also not effective in monitoring and implementing of action plans, and the entities did not put in place adequate controls to prevent non-compliance with procurement legislation. And the recommendations and what we've highlighted overall to the entities is that, and I'll look at the bottom two, is that the department and its entities within the portfolio should elevate the implementation of good practice, such as consistent in-year monitoring and of financial performance management controls, whilst remedial actions need to be promptly implemented, and tighten the implementation of assurance provider model, specifically the reviews required to be performed at senior management level. So if they can implement these, they should be able to improve the audit outcomes. We have also went deeper and to say that there must be the reviews and over financial and performance reports so that they detect and correct the errors during the senior monitoring and review processes, and also make sure that the action plans address the root causes, and these actions are timely implemented and also ensure compliance with SCM-related prescripts to ensure and ensure that consequence management is implemented and maintain reliable records to support investigations, financial statements, and the annual report. To the portfolio committee, we are saying that monitoring and regular follow-up with the executive authority and accounting officer authorities on the progress made on implementing the action plans that have been put in place by the department and its entities, and also follow up on the department and its entities that incurred irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure to ensure that consequence management is implemented. And it is important that a culture of consequence management must be enforced in the portfolio. That is the end of my presentation. Thank you so much. I'll hand back over to you, Kabo.
Thank you so much. Chair, that is the summation of our feedback to the committee. Perhaps we'll pause here and just appreciate some of the comments. I think the key highlight in terms of the matters we're going to request, we are requesting the portfolio to work on, is an element around compliance. And really, SCE will benefit from very close monitoring and support, because where they are sitting is not ideal. And considering the fact that they are remaining in that same category, they will require at least a bit of more intense effort for them to try and move a notch up. Thanks, Chair. May we pause? Thanks.
So thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Kay and your team. And yeah, I think there it's quite, should I say, it's reader friendly, it's pointed, and it's really assisting us to conduct our oversight. I'm going to do something that I don't do, but today I will start, because I usually don't do that, but I will allow members to, whilst hands are going up, there are a number of, I'll then allow members to ask questions, but can I just start by commenting on some of the issues that I think are very important. You raised something about the SEE in terms of location of assets. I just want to understand if they can locate those assets, what is the response that they have given to you that made you to be satisfied, and subsequently, because they are then being monitored by the department, what then was then the response of the department on that? In terms of the, I'm shocked or disappointed. I fail to understand why NEDLAC and Dell don't there are no quotations. What is the explanation that you have then been given? My last comment is that I do understand that there is a DG in the department. And obviously a DG can't be all over the place, I mean, in provinces and whatever. But there are senior managers. I'm worried about the weak, should I say, weak preparation for financial statements by senior managers. But it comes back to the DG, because he is the accounting officer, the buck stops with him. What then was the, is it because his laser fee fair, or is it lack of skills, or is it shortage of staff? When you ask them, the department, what then was then the response? Because it goes hand in hand for me, the preparation, but also the failure minister and DG of senior managers to monitor and ensure that things are then being I'm just reflecting on those. For starters, I'm still going to come back with more pointed questions. Honorable members, those I just wanted to make that remark first, And you can, I don't see hands, members.
Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, Michael.
Can I please, Chair? The hands are up there, it's shown on the top.
Order. Moses Mtabe.
I'm silent, Chair.
Mkonto.
Are you with us, Chair?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Honorable Mtabe.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to Honorable Members. Just one question. You have covered me on the other two that I had. The clarity that I'm looking for, the comment from the Auditor General, is there a valid reason that justifies why the late submission of the AFS by the UIF and compensation fund? Have they then, the Auditor General, issued the management letter to them? If not, maybe this would be part of the comment that would form part of their reporting to the entities. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Dana.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to everyone, and thank you for the presentation. I have three questions. The first is with regards to the recommendations on page 14. One of the recommendations is implement effective performance management processes that ensure that all role players implement their duties adequately. I would like to know if the recommendation is to implement effective performance management processes, are there any performance management processes already in place? And if there are no performance management processes in place, that's quite worrying, so I would like to know why that is. And then also on page 16 of the presentation, consequence management, where the AG could not determine whether or not disciplinary steps were taken. I would like to know, we sit here every year with every report and we talk about consequence management that is lacking in the department. So why is consequence management still a problem? I think we should flag that as a red flag. And my last question, Chair, is on page 18 of the presentation with regards to the 900,000 rand fruitless and wasteful expenditure due to the loss of assets. I'd like to understand how assets just get lost. Who is in charge of these assets? Who is in charge of the asset register? And are there any consequence management measures implemented with regards to the loss of these assets? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Sorry, I think Honourable Zuma has got a problem with the issue of the hands. Can I allow her to ask a question then? Then the other members will come in whose hands are here. Honourable Zuma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. No, mine, I just want to know that to the department, that what is their plan or strategy just to improve some of the entities that they didn't perform well. Secondly, covered by Honourable Mtabe about the two entities. The third one is about NEDLAC. I just want the clarity that what happened about those tenders that they didn't advertise it. Is it the negligence of the SCM or what happened, or is the management? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Zuma. Honourable Bakram.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. And thank you for the report. It makes very interesting and quite disappointing, maybe even depressing reading. Every year, and as long as I can remember, there's always been a problem with consequence management. And My comment is that the AG now has the power to actually take action themselves. Their powers have been improved quite radically. I think it was a year ago. And one would expect them to now start stepping in and performing some of the consequence management themselves. Because if we had consequence management, we probably wouldn't have such a dismal report every single year from the AG. So I'm just trying to put some pressure on the AG to say, can you take some action? Because it doesn't look like the minister wants to take any action, and he never will. The next thing is obviously the issue on performance. Now, obviously, consequence management might help performance as well, but we know two or three of the entities under the Department of Employment and Labour have just not performed at all. Zero. In fact, they're negative. They're handbrakes to performance. And again, if there's no performance and we're spending money, could the AG step in and also take some action? So thank you for listening to me.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry if I missed this, but I just wanted to know why the audits on the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Compensation Fund haven't been finalised, and when we can expect their finalisation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ricardo. Honourable Mkonda.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to you and Honourable Members. Ms. Habo, Kumape and her team, and the minister and his team. Chair, according to this report, there are targets that were not met. If I remember very well, in one of the reports, we were told that the department was bought gadgets for officials to be able to work at home during the pandemic. I just want to check if this report considered that, and as to how efficient and effective those gadgets contributed in making sure that the work of the department is done even during the pandemic. Because I'm hearing now we might be having excuses that people were not able to work to perform because of the pandemic. But money was spent on gadgets. Number two, the SPE findings, according to this report, are recurring and they are bad. I just want to check if we have qualified personnel in terms of finance management and consequent management in the SPEs. Chair, a simple thing, assets disappearing. Were they stolen? Were they disposed? What exactly happened? And after, and what is the worth of those assets when the SEUs ultimately lose them in whatever way? And to start, if the SEUs themselves, were they able to function during the COVID-19? I don't understand, Chair, the issue of reports done manually. As I said, there are gadgets that were said to be bought during the pandemic. So how do we do things manually if IT gadgets were bought? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mkonda. Honourable Nonsele.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Good morning to all the members, including the Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, the DG and his team. Chair, my questions, in fact, have been covered in broad terms by many speakers earlier on. It's just a point of emphasis that I could make. Firstly, with regard to the recurring nature of the SEE challenges, whether, for instance, AG has specific recommendations that they would want to share, particularly with regard to the areas that Honorable Bikram has raised. Yeah, just to rephrase that question, but also just to check with the extent of the powers that they currently have. The second point is with regard again to the outstanding audits. Chair, as we all know that the two entities are entities that have been on the headlines for quite some time, particularly with regard to the audit outcomes. The question to AG team is the timeline with regard to the outcomes of those audits that are still underway, whether, for instance, are we going to get them soon so that we can as well deal with whatever consequences that or outcomes that are going to come forward. Lastly, Chair, I think the presentation, we must appreciate the presentation that the AG team has put forward, particularly with regard to areas where significant progress has been made in some of the entities, but as well as to highlight to us where, for instance, there's potential areas for urgent action that needs to be taken. So that's my concluding point, Chair. But then those are the questions at the same time that I've raised earlier on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nansale. My last question is to AG's office. My understanding is that, let me rephrase. Do you physical audit, or do you go physically to provinces when you do audit, or you depend on the information that you are given by HQ of the Department of Employment and Labour? I'm asking this question because we may be what is this term? I don't want to say we may be barking the wrong tree, or we are to bark that tree. But at the end of the day, it is the bus stop with the head office to the ministry and the head of the administration, which is the DG. But I'm interested to understand that how do you conduct those audits in provinces? Do you go there physically? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. May we go ahead and respond, Chair?
Yes, you may. Yes, you may, Ms. Kate.
Thank you so much. I just want to afford Michelle an opportunity to take some of the nitty-gritty. I just want to start with two of the main, of the key comments from the honorable members. I think the first one that says, the AGSA, you have, so to speak, you have the powers, and how are you dealing with it? And I think in the presentation, there was a slide where Michelle was highlighting how, as the AGSA's organization, we had approached the element of the amended Public Audit Act. And we did a phase-in approach. And the phase-in meant that we needed to take the public sector in tranches. And you would have noted in the presentation that we said we would not have selected or at least phased in the amendment in the portfolio of Dell, except for the UIF and the compensation fund. We started with those ones for this audit that we are busy with. But I think the key element of that amendment as well, you would see that it leverage on the mechanisms that's supposed to already work within the public sector. And key to it is what is highlighted in the PFMA in terms of what a counting officer ought to do. Because by the time the PAA gets activated, there's a responsibility for the accounting officer. If you take the department under Section 38, it will demand that there have to be investigation of irregular expenditure and fruitless effort. There has to be a consequence management. And that PFMA did not change, which means that that layer of responsibility and accountability still remain with the accounting officer, and it has to be. And again, Chairperson, there is an element that this committee we also relying on, that part of this oversight and the quarterly monitoring, it also built in into that whole accountability wheel, because the PAA does not necessarily take the powers away from all the role players within the public sector. It builds on those pillars. That's why as the AGSA, we would not necessarily stop from asking all the other role players, especially at accounting officer level and at executive level, to activate their responsibilities. Because without that, it would mean that then the AG would have to do everything at the same time, and it may not necessarily be as effective. But so far as the phase-in is concerned, as I indicated, within this labor portfolio for this audit that we are busy with, we've taken two of your big entities, and those are the ones that we are communicating material irregularities. But again, you will see that we rely on this committee very much, Jay, in terms of just making sure that the monitoring, the enforcement of accountability takes place, because that's how the Public Audit Act is structured. I think there was a question around UIF and compensation fund. So the compensation fund submitted financial statement on the 31st of July. As I indicated, we advanced it. In fact, compensation fund will definitely have signed it by the 31st of November. I mean, the 30th of November, definitely. We've already done, I think there was also a question to say, have you issued management report? Yes, we did. We even went to the audit committee already. So far as the compensation fund is concerned, really we advanced and we should be able to sign them anytime before the 30th of November. The UIF is still at execution level, and at this point in time, they submitted only on the 30th of September, which was pretty much late. And remember that they're also sitting with 60 billion plus just on the TERS that we needed to overhaul entirely. So there we were hoping to push our team to ensure that they at least sign it somewhere in by the 15th of December, is the target that we put for ourselves, if we were to complete the TERS and complete it properly. But the UIF would not have issued the management report as we stand, Chairperson. It's still at execution level. They were a bit behind in terms of the submission than the compensation fund. Michelle, if I can ask you just to take some of the nitty-gritty, and then I'll come to close to the few that will be left. Thanks.
Thanks, Thabo. I'll start on the SEE in terms of the inventory. So here, there was the SEE had given a service provider inventory, almost like a delivery company to go and deliver the assets. However, there was no evidence that the delivery had taken place. We are saying that when we analyzed as well, I think the SEE as well looked into this. When we looked at it, we said, look, there should be more control over the delivery company that you are giving these assets to, so that you make sure that they are actually at the place that they're supposed to be delivered at. They have disclosed it as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the next process that the PFMA requires is that there should be an investigation be performed to assess and also to recover this. So it has been identified as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It is critical that the SEE then identifies who was responsible. Is it internally or is it the service provider? And then take the next actions that are critical in terms of recovering those processes. So it is disclosed, and it will be tracked then to make sure that consequence management is then taking place. In terms of the NEDLAC, the irregular expenditure mainly was identified by their own internal processes. So it was detected by them and investigated by their own internal audit. They have taken some of the actions. They have disclosed that in their financial statements in terms of investigating and dismissing the people that were responsible. So therefore, in that category, we agreed with their irregular expenditure in that we did not also see that. They are taking action. We are saying to them they need to make sure that there's preventative controls. So it shouldn't be a control that comes in after. So they shouldn't say, oh, this has already happened, now we're taking action. What we're saying is that rather have preventative controls and strengthen that element so that you are able to detect these before now you have to do disciplinary action, which is not necessarily ideal. So their internal process and internal audit did identify these areas. In terms of the question on performance management for the department, there is a performance process. What we are saying is that it needs to be a little bit more aligned so that you make sure that senior management is performing their function. So your performance, maybe it should be a bit more detailed in terms of what are you supposed to do on a daily basis and whether the audit findings are being addressed, so that we do hold our senior management accountable for their daily responsibilities, because we all have, if you look at the assurance provider model, the senior managers have the first level of assurance as well as the accounting officer, but it's important that senior management does their daily controls, does their reconciliation to enable them to prepare adequate and accurate reports. And this goes in conjunction with the question that was raised in terms of the department, in terms of the material misstatements that were identified within the department. And here we are also saying that if senior management does their role throughout the year in terms of in-year monitoring, making sure that information, for example, if it's leases that's coming from the provinces, those are already captured properly, the commitments are calculated accurately, and somebody reviews that so that the year-end process of producing financial statements is seamless. And this needs to be done throughout the year by senior management, and that as the first level assurance provider. In terms of, there was the question, yes, there were laptops that were given to some of the officials as officials were working mainly on the desktop, but COVID then had to make sure that the department then needed to respond and make sure that people are able to work from home. We did not necessarily identify a business, people not being able to work. Obviously, COVID did impact some of the projects or the targets that needed to be done because of the restrictions that were coming in and out. But I don't think in the main, we did not necessarily not identify that these functions are not working. But for performance information, we do note that the configuration of the system in terms of how you capture performance information, so your targets, so once the inspection is done, the platform where they capture it, that is not configured well, and that is the finding that we've raised to them to management to say that they need to make sure that all the modules are open for all the provinces. People are trained at the province to use the system so that the system can be up and running and we can see the full use of the performance information system. That was in terms of the laptops that were provided. In terms of the provinces, yes, we do. COVID also did give us also restrictions in terms of visiting. We did try and go out to some, so we do go out to the provinces. Obviously now with the future, we will be going out as we were previously. We did introduce some other procedures that could assist us, but we do go out and visit and visit the provinces and see what is happening there as well. I think, Khabo, I don't know if I've left any out in terms of this. In terms of consequence management, there is a section in the department that deals with investigation, but it is important that this investigation get finalized and we make sure that employee relations also plays their part, because once you've defined that this person is now this person has transgressed, it needs to then go to the employee relations department, and that process must be tightened up and make sure that if the person needs whatever consequence management needs to be taken, that it is then the process is seen to finality. so that the person is then either dealt with according to whatever sanction that is being awarded to them. Thank you, Khabo.
Thank you so much. I think maybe there's just some of the questions I think is here. At least the department and the entity will be best suited to just appraise the members in terms of exactly where these assets would be. But I think there was this question on the visiting to the provinces. If you take Labour, Chair, all the years when we audit the department, we've always gone to the provinces. But when we do go to the provinces, we make it the head office responsibility, because they're the one that prepare the performance report, they're the one that prepare the financial statements. So normally when we go to the provinces, we make sure that we have given them the request ahead of time, and we make sure that we coordinate with the head office, meaning the Pretoria office, in terms of the turnaround time, in terms of the outcomes that we are getting from there. This year, we had asked the head office to consolidate the information centrally. Yes, we would not have visited the provinces. We would have gauged whether the national office is able to give us the information. As they were able to pull it, then we could allow the team to work from the national office. But I think under all of these normal circumstances, if there is a need, if the national office is not able to pull the information, they request us. Perhaps maybe it could be quantum is too much, we can go to the provinces. I think for Labour in particular, yes, we do visit. I just wanted to pause. I think the question on the network in terms of why they're not following the supply chain processes, part of the matters that they put forward for us was that, look, there was a deviation. And we said, look, that deviation was not in line with the supply chain prescript, because the prescript says if you deviate, there has to be under three circumstances, and those three circumstances are explicit. You know, it's emergency. It has to be sole provider. It has to be practical for you to go on the tender processes. And it also needed to be authorized by the right level. And I think at that point in time, it would have been authorized at a more junior level, a CFO level, as opposed to the accounting officer at that point in time. So I think those are some of the responses that we get as and when we do this audit, but I still think that they may be best suited to then elaborate why these things are happening the way that they're happening. Thank you so much, Chair, for the opportunity. Very grateful.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kay and your team. I think when now we will then be getting presentations from Dell and its entities, will then be able to pinpoint that in some of these areas that you have reflected on. As I've said initially, that it's this whole process is really assisting us in ensuring that we conduct our oversight diligently. I know it may not be, we have got different expectations as members, that how things are to be done, and we know that they are laws that are governing whatever, whether in investigation or dismissing a worker in a particular workplace. As much as I've said that, but if then the leadership of the institution is taking its feet, we will then have to dig deeper why then it is then that case. I agree with you. We can't then abdicate our responsibility because there's an amended act in terms of the role of AG. What I think we are to do now, we are to do things differently. It can be business as usual, but as we are then doing our work, we will then ensure that we do the necessary, conduct our necessary oversight within the prescript of the law. Because at times as members, we think that things must just be done. If Worker X has done something wrong, Worker X must just be fired. That's the feeling that I'm getting. And they are. And I'm not implying that the department must not be criticized. But thank you very much. We are then going to, those members must understand that AG has given us this report. We have asked questions. We are then going to get presentations from the entities, and then we will then go to these areas and ask questions from them in relation to how then what has been reflected on the report and what then has been a response from clarities that were requested from the AG's office. Having said that, thank you very much. We are a bit concerned about UIF and compensation fund, Minister and DG, as outlined by the AG, but we will await that time when things have then been tabled and presented to us by the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa. Having said that, you are then released. We will then get the first presentation, Mr. Sakaza. Thank you very much, Ms. Kay.
Thank you so much, Chair. I was just asking that we stay, especially my team, just so that we can just hear out some of the presentations. Thanks, Chair.
Yes. In fact, thank you for reminding me. You are welcome to stay. In fact, you are to stay throughout, but you'll see how you do that, how you delegate that. Thank you very much. Mr. Sakaza, the first presentation.
I chair is the department, and I've made UDG a call so that he can share, and Matap and they can share the screen. Chair.
Over to you, Mr. Lamati.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to the Honorable Members, the Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues, AEG colleagues led by Ms. Komape. Chair, when I made the introduction of the people that are part of the DELS delegation, I forgot to mention the Chairperson of the Audit Committee and also the Chairperson of the Risk Management Committee, Mayor Jane Masite and Mr. Sku Nyangizimbi. Chair, I'm going to ask the COO, Marsha Bronkhorst, to do the presentation. But I do want to just firstly reflect on what is contained in the presentation. Chair, you will see that the presentation follows a pattern where we take the committee through in terms of how we performed per quarter. And what you will observe in the presentation, Chair, I know that, and I heard Honorable Mkhondo saying that COVID has been in some instances used as an excuse. But we cannot deny the fact that 2020 financial year has been a very difficult year. And the committee will remember that our performance throughout the years has been hovering around over 80%, close to 90%. And for quarter one, you'll see that it was very, very difficult because of the lockdown. And the committee, again, will remember that the nature of the work that we do as a department necessitates that there's physical contact between us and the clients that we serve. The inspectors, for instance, they have to go out and do inspection. Now, during the hard lockdown, there were limited establishments that were open for business. Honorable members will also remember that only those entities that were performing essential service were allowed to operate. So as and when the alert levels changed, you will also see that our performance also mirrors that change, because we could have more people back and companies were able to resume economic activities, which meant that that interaction between ourselves and the entities that we, the private entities that we deal with, including public entities that we deal with, were able to have that that interaction. That's the first thing. The second thing, Chair, is that we will deal decisively with issues relating to governance. Just once the COO has done the presentation. So I want to hand over to her to just quickly run through the presentation. Thanks.
Sorry, ma'am. I see two hands. Is it old hands, Mr. Honorable Kado and Honorable Baker? Can you please lower your hands? Because your hands are still up. You may continue, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can ask Matapelo just to share the presentation with us, I would appreciate that. Yeah, she is. Chairperson, whilst I'm waiting for Matapelo to share the presentation, two presentations were circulated to the Portfolio Committee, and the one was with the, which had in the heading the issue of the impact analysis of the department. Now, that is the presentation with a lot of additional statistical information in terms of extra work that can be used as background information. The presentation I'm going to talk on is the one which is has got the first heading slide, Audited Annual Performance Report, Employment and Labour Portfolio Committee. I'm just trying to find out, Matapelo, whether she's sharing, why she's not sharing yet.
Chair, through you, Chair, can I also indicate that Ms. Broncos also has the right to share? I've made also her a co-host if she wants to share from her side. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I may, the technical abilities, and after the very bad COVID experience I've had, I've learned to rely on younger people to do this, if you will forgive me, that we just get Matapelo to deal with the matter. Chair, if I can just, I'm being told some information, so... Chair, I'm being told that she is sharing, but it's taking a bit of time to reflect on the screen. If, with your indulgence, Chair, I'm allowed to continue with the presentation as the presentation was circulated, would that be acceptable to the members?
Members, that is the request. Can we agree to do that? Because it's going really to take time if we wait. Members do have this document that was circulated on time. You may continue, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Okay, alternative plans, it comes up. Thank you, Chair. But that is the one for supported employment. I will look at the one for Dell. Chair, as I was saying, for members who are following on their devices, it is the presentation called Audited Annual Performance Report 2021. And I am going to move directly to slide number 9 in the presentation. The heading of that slide is the comparative analysis per program for quarter 1 to quarter 4, 2021. The Director General in his introduction said that we could see as the lockdown was eased how the performance of the department improved with every quarter. So on slide 9, we can see that in quarter 1 for the financial year under reporting, we achieved 25% of our targets, with corporate services or administration achieving 29%, inspection and enforcement services 25%, public employment services 0, and I'm sure when you look at the 0 and you think that public employment services had 100% achievement in the previous financial years, you'll recall that public employment services is dependent on people. And if with the hard lockdowns, people could not access our labor centers, they could, by the nature of the work that they do, not do the work to the level of achieving their indicators. And then labor policy, industrial relations achieved 43% of their indicators. In quarter two, the performance of the department nearly doubled to 48%, with the administration taking a substantial decrease in performance to 13%, inspection and enforcement services going up to 50%, public employment services 67%, and labor policy industrial relations going up to 80%. In quarter three, there was a further improvement or increase in the performance of the department. We went to 64% achievement, with administration up to 50%, IES up to 50%, public employment services up to 67%, and labor policy and industrial relations up to 100%. Quarter three, there was a small increase in our performance up to 67%, with administration decreasing their performance to 38%, IES staying consistent on 50%, public employment services up to 83%, and labor policy and industrial relations up to 89%. I just want to stop a moment with public employment services. You can see as the lockdown eased and people were allowed to move around more and we could open more labor centers and get more of our officials to service, how the performance of public employment services has increased. And that brought us to an overall performance in quarter four of 67%. The next slide, the next two slides are just graphs explaining the performance and giving us some trends. The next slide I would like to look at is slide 12, because slide 12 gives us a total performance overview of the year under review. In terms of administration, the program administration, they had an overall achievement of 25%. IES had an overall achievement of 50%. Public employment services performance was 83%, and labor policy and industrial relations was 90%. And with labor policy and industrial relations, you will ask how they managed to achieve the 90%. Many of the indicators are related to transfers and assistance to the public entities that fall in this particular program. With the total performance of the department then at 66% for the year 2021. Slide 13 gives us a sense of the performance of provinces. I know that the members are always interested in the performance of the provinces, as we all come from provinces one way or the other. And in slide 13, I'm giving a reflection on the performance of the provinces for quarter one and quarter two of 2021 for inspection and enforcement services. And here you can clearly see reflected the performance of the program by the individual provinces, mostly lying at 33% the performance of the provinces, with one or two provinces achieving 67%, that is Limpopo and Northwest, that was in quarter one. In quarter two, it has increased as well, again, when the lockdown started easing, as the Director General said, and more business places were open for our inspectors to continue with inspections. On slide 14, it's a reflection of quarters three and four for inspection and enforcement services, with Free State achieving 100% performance. You'll see that they managed 100% performance in quarters two, three, and four. The only province that managed to do it for three quarters in a row. There were some other provinces which managed a quarter here or a quarter there, for example, Eastern Cape, who managed 100% in quarter four, as well as Western Cape, who did 100% in quarter three and four, and Mpumalanga, who did it in quarter three. So these are then linked again, as we saw, with a slow increase in performance in the program. Slide 15 gives us a reflection of the performance of public employment services per province. And here we can see the performance, as I explained it already, how it slowly improved per province. Gauteng, for example, in quarter two, Limpopo in quarter two, as Northern Cape and Western Cape, they managed to achieve 100% of the indicators as set to them in the annual performance plan. Slide 16 gives us a reflection on quarters three and four. And here, Limpopo managed to give 100% for both quarters, 3-4, and in fact for quarter two, if you will recall, as Northern Cape also achieved 100%, as did Eastern Cape. So a varied bunch of performance, if I could call it that, as we have seen. Chairperson, as with your agreement, I will focus on the areas of non-achievement for the department. I think that is the areas that the committee would be most interested in. And most of the areas of non-achievement, as you saw from the performance per program, was in the program administration, who over the course of the year only achieved 25% at the end of the year of the indicators. So one of the indicators was the filling of funded posts, and members of this committee, this is on slide 19. Members of the committee will recall that we are asked about the filling of vacancies every year, that we are struggling to fill the vacancies and come to an acceptable level of vacancies in the department. So what has happened here is that we wanted to fill 80% of our funded vacancies within 4 months. Unfortunately, we could only fund 28%. We introduced a new form of email applications, but that created a massive bottleneck in the department, and I suspect in other departments as well, because one would find that up to 6,000 applications steam in for one post. And these, in terms of the processes, have been to be reflected in our systems, our HRM systems, and that created for substantial delays in finalizing the filling of the vacancies. Then we move to the next slide. We wanted to review and finalize our sexual harassment policy. This had to be integrated with gender-based violence, steps against gender-based violence. It was reviewed by the process owners, but we had to continue with further consultation. And consultation by integration had to take place with our organized labor partners within the department. And that led to some challenges because people could not travel at some stage, and we had delays in finalizing that policy. On the next slide, and I'm sure you have already heard about the challenges we've had with the ICT. One area which was not completed was the acquisition and improvement of our ICT systems. Although we had our systems available for 92% of the year, but we could not finalize the upgrade of the systems as per the SAP for HANA project and how we wanted to do that. You heard earlier when the Auditor General colleagues made their presentation, they spoke about the SEE and the scoping thereof. I think the Director General will, in his closing comments, speak a little bit about that. But this project was running behind, but the Director General will give us a sense of what we have done to correct this challenge. On slide 22, ethics governance in place and a complete rollout of the ethics management plan. We have done these documents in draft form, and the ethics statutory compliance obligations are reflected in our ethics strategy and management plan. However, it could not be completed because we had to redraft and reconsult in terms of new information which we had to include in this particular policy. If we move to slide 23, the number of resolution of reported incidents. We wanted to resolve 90% of our incidents, particularly those where we had to do disciplinary and criminal investigations. Only 63% of the cases were completed, 123 cases were received, 78 were finalized. And many of these cases are complicated cases, especially when it comes to the corruption cases or where there are fraudulent activities. Sometimes where there are syndicates or groups of people involved, it becomes a very complex investigation, and that leads to delays in finalization of the cases. But in later slides, I will talk to you a little bit more about consequential management. On slide 24, I think the elimination of irregular and unauthorized expenditure. Unfortunately, there was an increase in irregular expenditure. The colleagues from the Auditor General already alluded to the issue of the SAP licenses. I think the Director General and the CFO will make further comments around this matter when the CFO does his presentation. And then on slide 24 is the same, the issue of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, where there was an increase, and I think also here the CFO will inform the committee. That takes care of the program administration. If the committee will allow me to continue moving to inspection and enforcement services, and here there are two indicators which have not been achieved. The first one is that of the number of inspections which had to be done. As you will recall, businesses were also closed, and that even though the branch put active measures in place to do inspections and improve on the increase the number of inspections and work much more in the fourth IR, I think they still were down with just under 10,000 inspections. The next area of non-achievement for the branch IAS would be on page 30, and this was the hosting of seminars as was planned, and I think this is self-explanatory. If we could not travel, people could not, big groups of people could not get together, it was not possible for the branch to hold the seminars as expected. Chairperson, when I did the provincial performance on public employment services, there were a number of provinces that had underachieved, but in the end, in the year, in terms of the achievement of the annual targets or the annual indicators, the branch achieved all of the indicators. So there's only one area of non-achievement, and that was on slide 33, the number of policies developed, and this is the policy which is currently receiving a lot of attention, is the employment and migration policy. I think that policy was a bit more than what was originally conceptualized, because a lot of consultation had to take place. And I'm sure if you have questions, that the DDG for Public Employment Services would be able to give more context to this. That takes care of the areas of underperformance in terms of public employment services. For the branch LP and IR on slide 41, the only area of underperformance was the publication of the annual administrative statistics. And here I think the challenge was the disruption of working time and the gathering of the data, etc., which led to them publishing it 3 weeks after the deadline date. Chairperson, on slide 44, there is a breakdown of the consequential management, and I would like to talk a little bit about this slide. Excuse me. I know that a number of comments were made by the colleagues from the Auditor General that there was no proof of consequential management. Matabu, if you could just move on, please. You were at the right slide. Just move two down. There you go. Thank you. For this 384 cases, we have got the documents, everything on file. So whilst there might have been cases perhaps that we could not provide, this 384 cases, the documents are on file and is readily available. I also would like to focus the attention of the committee to the fact that the consequential management right through in the department, takes through from the lowest to the highest level. You will see that, for example, SR 13, 14 and 15, which is your senior management services, there were quite a number of disciplinary actions taken against members of the senior management service. SR 13 are director level, 14 is chief director, and 15 is DDG level. And then you will also see that the other cases that were taken were across the board, as I explained. So there is a balance in terms of the disciplinary action taken against officials and on whatever SR levels they are. SR 6, which you will see is a substantial number, is because the bulk of the staff of the department fall in the SR 6 category. Our client service officers, inspectors, etc., all fall in that category. On the next slide, Chair, you will see the breakdown of the types of cases of this 384, the types of cases which we have dealt with. And I'm just going to focus on a few. There were 22 fraudulent cases that were dealt with, finalized. One for bribery, 45 for negligence, 3 for fruitless wasteful expenditure, 11 for irregular expenditure, 14 for misuse of state vehicles, and 24 for no-shows. Now, this no-show is, for example, when I say I'm going to the portfolio committee in Cape Town, I book a flight and I book accommodation, and then I just don't go. Of course, the department then incurs fruitless expenditure, but we classify it as a no-show just for us to be able to know what was the nature of this fruitless expenditure, and officials are then tasked with repaying. They normally get disciplined as well as they have to repay the department in terms of this fruitless expenditure. The next number of slides gives us a breakdown in terms of legislation for inspection enforcement services, the details thereof per province. It also gives us the next, quite a next number of slides, give us a breakdown for public employment services, as well as trade unions and so forth. And I, as this was circulated, I'm not going to go through this in detail. I would like us to move to slide 82. Slide 82. So this is just our summary of the audit outcomes. We have had an extensive discussion, so I'm not going to overgraze. We had an unqualified audit with matters of emphasis, of concern to us that there are a large number of ICT findings. Cybersecurity is a big concern to the department, and we are busy finalizing the appointment of an expert service provider to assist the department because we do not have the skills in-house. The underutilization of the SAP licenses, which I think our colleague from the AG has already alluded to, and then outdated active registers. And what this is should I leave the employee of the Department of Labor, my email account is not immediately disabled. It lies there as active, yet I'm no longer in the service. So we have embarked on a reconciliation process to take care of this matter. There are supply chain management findings, a number of them in terms of contract management. There are the increase in the irregular expenditure, which we have already discussed or heard from our colleagues, and then the AOPO findings around the registers in IAS, which we have already discussed. I have in the slides in slide 83 made a number of actions to address the audit outcomes, but I think the Director General will, in his closing comments, speak a little bit more about that. So I'm not going to steal his thunder and repeat that. Chairperson, I think in conclusion, we've had the last slide, 66% performance, as I alluded to earlier in the presentation. And then a hard lockdown in the first, second quarters definitely had an impact on the performance of the department. We had to find creative ways. And as I said, we are dependent on people coming to us or people interacting with us. And not always was it possible to do it from home online. Chair, I would like to end my presentation there and then allow the General, I don't know if you want the CFO to present.
Yes. DG. Chair, may I ask the CFO, Mr. Matuna, to just run through the finances, please?
Good morning, honorable members. Minister, Deputy Minister, and colleagues. On my presentation, quite a number of issues have been highlighted already.
Chair, I'm sorry, Chairperson. Is it not wise just for the presenters at the beginning, they just show their faces and then they can switch off the video and continue? Because we're talking to the people, there's some of whom you do not know.
No, thank you. In fact, that's what I was just about to say, but this thing of whatever. Ask to be excused, but I think you are correct. If presenters can just show their faces and then switch off their videos after that. Thank you. Over to you, CFO.
Thanks.
Your face, you are. Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you.
On the first slide, the next slide, as has been indicated, we have an unqualified opinion for the 2021 financial year. And the two matters of emphasis with regard to the restatement of some figures in the prior year, as noted in note number 33 of the financial statements. And the second one, I'm still on that slide. The second one is the material underspend of the budget on the program 2, IES, by 89 million. In terms of the budget information for the department, out of the final appropriation of 3.2 billion, or just about 3.3 billion, the department spent 3.1, which amounts to 94.1% of the expenditure, and the underspend amounts to 196 million, with administration locking 72.8 million, inspection and enforcement services 89 million, public employment services 15.2 million, labor policy and industrial relations 19.1 million underspent. In terms of the next slides, expenditure information, the main reasons for underspent, as per the main division of the board administration, COE compensation of employees, as we have indicated on the performance information, the non-achievement in terms of filling in the vacancies, is featuring in all the programs in terms of the reasons for underspend. Under goods and services, the traveling and accommodation, although and foreign travel as well, this was during the period of lockdown, so that could not happen. Although we did pick up an expenditure on the data as people were working from home, and also on capital expenditure as projects could not start due to COVID lockdown. That's administration. The next one is inspection and enforcement services, 89 million. Compensation of employees, goods and services, and capital. I think it translates to all the divisions of the department. Public employment services, it will also be compensation of employees, goods and services, the amount that they've budgeted for traveling, and capital expenditure in terms of the procurement that did not happen. And labor policy and industrial relations. The same explanation in terms of that 19.1 million was allocated to compensation of employees, goods and services, and in case of labor policy and industrial relations, we also had some savings due to the fluctuations in exchange rates to payments of to international organizations. So the rent worked into look in our the exchange rate worked into look to our favor here, and we paid less than we had budgeted for. And the next slide, I think the next slide in terms of the just a graphical explanation of the expenditure, and the next slide. Expenditure information, economic classification. Look, that is in terms of economic classification, compensation of employees. That, I think, summarized the compensation of employees savings in total that I was indicating on each and every branch to say for the department, it amounted to 227.2 million underspent. Goods and services was 40.7 million. Transfers and subsidies was 9.5 million, and payment for capital assets was 18.6 million under spend, which also amounts to 196.2 million under spend for the department, which will translate to 5.9% under spend. The last slide in terms of the financial information, not this or the next one, where we indicate the underspend after putting aside the transfers and subsidies, because by and large that happens in our entities. So our expenditure, well, when we deduct the transfers and look at the allocated amount less transfers and subsidies, it amounts to 1.9 million, of which the expenditure was 1.7 million. So the actual expenditure for the department, the expenditure was 90.6%. The other issues of fruitless, and I think they were covered on the performance information, so it was not included in here, but we'll, should there be some further engagement, we'll provide those clarifications. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just a reflection on the part on key issues that were raised by the colleagues and also the AG. On the performance information, we received a qualified audit on the performance information, and AG reflects it as an improvement, but we don't see it that way as a department, because that's not where we should be. We are now full steam. All provinces are using the inspection and enforcement services system. So we think that the issue of reliability of information will be a thing of the past, and we will not accept any information that is not loaded onto the system. So that's the first thing. The second thing that AJ raised was the issue relating to licenses. We had delays in the implementation of what we call the SAP roadmap. And part of the delays, of course, was related to COVID. But we picked up that the service provider that we contracted to roll out the SAP licenses to the department missed some crucial deadlines. And as in terms of the service level agreement that we have with them, there's provision for breach, or invoking a breach clause in an event that some key milestones have not been met. And we did exactly that. We held the service provider to account, and we invoked the breach clause in the service level agreement. And now we're happy that the project is on track. We have set up in my office a project management office that gives me a dashboard view on a regular basis in terms of where we are with all the projects. And the project heads, which are mainly your DDGs, they account on the progress with the projects. One of the things that we're also checking is the cost of delays in the implementation of the, or in the rolling out of this project. And so far, we haven't had issues relating to cost increases as a result of the delays. Also on governance issues, Chair, I think the minister spoke about this in his opening address, that we have taken steps to make sure that we improve governance of all the governance structures that we have, including audit committee and risk committee. We have agreed that on a quarterly basis they'll submit reports to the accounting officer indicating the state of internal controls in the department and the state of governance. And that's the resolution of the oversight and governance Lekhutlan meeting that we had. The positive development with regards to SCE, and you might have heard the colleagues from AG indicating that a part of the audit findings at SCE relates to services in kind, and the fact that we provide resources or provided resources to the entity, and they did not account for those in terms of the they did not account for that in their finances. We have appointed the CEO, Mr. Pagati. He is going to do the SCE presentation. So we have appointed a CEO. We have also appointed a chief financial officer. She's also in the in the meeting to respond to a number of questions relating to SCE, and they have started working on these issues, Chair. I think I'm going to hand over to a CEO of SCE, Chair, to run through the presentation of SCE, if you allow. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, may she? Will allow you to do that?
It's a he.
Oh, sorry. I will allow him to do that. Thank you. Over to you, sir. And may we see your face, please?
Mr. Pagati?
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I'm not sure if the members can see me or...
Yes, we can see you.
Yes. Yes, Chairperson of the Performance Committee, Minister, Deputy Minister.
Sorry, can you you are more, we see half of your face. I don't know whether it's my, can you please say, okay. Yes. Now it's much better.
Thank you so much. All right. All right. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, it's indeed with such great humility and profound gratitude for us to get this opportunity to address you on the SEE's annual report. I will take the Honourable Members through the overall achievements and challenges experienced towards achieving our key strategic imperatives during 2021 financial year. And then our Chief Financial Officer will take you through our audited financial statements for 2021 financial year, the audit opinion of the Auditor General, as well as the our audit action plan. Honourable Members, we come before you knowing very well that the challenges before us are real and serious, and also mindful of the task before us. So, Honourable Members, SCE has three major performance indicators that are inextricably linked to each other. One is to provide work opportunities for people with disabilities, which is our statutory mandate, our most sacrosanct and inescapable responsibility. But to allude on that, I would actually request that we move to slide number six. If you can move to slide number six. You appreciate that in the first quarter of the year under review, there was not much economic activity due to recovery from the pandemic. The whole country was still recovering from the pandemic. So as a result, in quarter one and quarter two, there wasn't much economic activity. But in quarter three, which is basically reflected in slide number seven, you would actually see that SEE actually achieved its mandate in terms of providing work opportunities for people with disabilities. As you would see, the overall achievement there is 100%, so there was no deviation in terms of our statutory mandate, which was actually great. If we can move to slide number eight. You see that two of our key performance indicators we didn't actually achieve, and I'll articulate on that in the next few slides. So overall achievement there was 33%, and this is largely due to decline in the increase of sales revenue, because like I indicated earlier on, that there was a decline in the country's economic activity, so there was less disposable income in most of our key clients, as well as there was actually a drastic drop in terms of sales revenue, because other departments within government were not spending as much money as we would have projected that they would. So if you can move to the next slide. Yes, and the following slide, yes, all right. As I indicated earlier on, in terms of our key mandate, there were no deviations. We actually achieved that one. And the challenge was actually around the increase in sales revenue, which was actually our key performance indicator. And if I can actually specifically look at that, I mean, there are many challenges that we're experiencing as a business. In terms of us being declared as a trading entity. I mean, those are some of the challenges why we cannot actually get much more a business in terms of scope. For example, in dealing with the corporate business, apart from the business that we get from government. And you'd find that the previous financial year, we had actually made a lot of money because of internal government business, but obviously, the 2020-21 financial year, there was a drastic decline. And we'll see that as you move to the next slide. Yeah. So you would see that in the previous financial year, we'd actually made 128 million. And there was a 67% decline in the period under review, because we only made 41 million. So you can imagine it actually dented our financials, because obviously for us to create employment opportunities, we need to generate as much sales revenue as possible to justify creating those employment opportunities. And again, the other measure in terms of our key performance indicators is the increase in the number of customer agreements, the memorandum of understanding. Because this will enable us to drive not only market share on a sustainable basis, but will also enable us, say, if we have a five-year MOU with key customers for the next 5 years, it will enable us to project how many prospective work opportunities we can create for the next 5 years. So again, on that one, we missed our target by just one. But I'm glad to report that even though during that period under review, we did not make that target, but we are now on a positive trajectory in terms of meeting these numbers, because there are many prospective customer clients that have actually signed up for some of those MOUs. Honorable members, I'd like to give over to our CFO, who's going to take us through some of the questions that we asked and address some of the financial statements and the audit opinion by the Auditor General.
Thank you very much. I hope the members can see me. Before I go through the presentation, I will answer some of the concerns that were raised during the previous presentation by the Auditor General. One of the questions that was raised, I'm going to switch off the video for now. One of the questions that was raised in terms of the loss of assets, I must say that because of the facilities that we operate in, we have 13 factories across the country. And location of these factories, sometimes you would see that they're located in industrial areas, and some of them are at the risk of theft and losses. So in 2020, when we did a full asset review a verification process, we did identify that there were numerous assets that were lost within the factories. And in some cases, these are due to the break-in that would have been experienced by the factories. But with regards to that, because we do have securities that have been deployed throughout the factories, we have also a liability clause with our contract with the securities, where these assets that have been lost within or that have been stolen or due to the break-in, we can recover those if the securities were found and negligent. But again, because now they are recorded under fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it's a process that it needs to go through the investigation review process. But where the police reports are available for us to claim from the security companies, we institute that liability clause that is within our contract. But most of these assets were identified when the asset verification were done, and we had to report as such in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. With regards to compliance findings, that were the question regarding the compliance findings, I must say that in the year of 2020-21, there were improvements with regards to compliance findings compliance performance. When we're looking into procurement and contract management, there were three findings that were raised with regards to compliance. One is the local content, which the members has raised a concern about that. During the audit process, when we were discussing this findings, we did have a very lengthy discussion with the AG in trying to explain that we, throughout our manufacturing process, we do source local content or locally produced raw material. And this finding was specifically relating to the wood raw material that was procured within our factory. And in that finding, we did explain that the only deficiency that was identified in there was the fact that when the advert went out, did not indicate that it must be a locally produced. However, when the evaluation of the process was being done in terms of the procurement, the service providers were assessed in terms of a provision of the locally produced raw material for the goods that we were procuring. So unfortunately, it's just one of those findings that we had discussions with the AG in trying to show reasons in terms of the fact that the final product that was delivered within our factory was a locally produced product. The other finding related to subcontracting, again, it was also another discussion that we had with the AG in trying to make them see reasons to say that subcontracting, in terms of the requirements, the regulation is very clear in terms of when you can subcontract and when you cannot subcontract. And it also gives provision to say if it's not feasible to subcontract, that doesn't stop the procurement process. So for this procurement, it was again for the wood where the subcontracting was not feasible for the entity to go through a subcontracting, but the AG was very adamant that we needed to have indicated that the subcontracting was not feasible throughout the during the advertising process. So those are the administrative issues that were picked up. However, in terms of the content of how the procurement was done, as far as I'm concerned, that was done above board. The other issue, the last finding under compliance, and these were the only three findings under compliance in terms of procurement that were identified relates to the evaluation system that was used. This one we had to concede and indicate to AG that, yes, the evaluation system that was used was not the correct evaluation system, but subsequent to AG finding identifying this finding, we did do the evaluation, and the same supplier was the same supplier that was initially awarded the contract would have been the supplier that would be awarded the contract should the 90-10 evaluation system be used. So it's one of those administrative findings within our compliance processes that we need to tighten up so that we avoid recurring on these findings. In terms of collection of data, the collection of data, I must say, is a big challenge, is a challenging area within our system right now. We are currently using the Cisco system, which is one of the systems that also is an underlying cause in terms of some of these findings that have been identified. You will see maybe in the management report that we do have a finding that relates to the system errors. But with regards to that, we have embarked on a project where the department has provided a funding for the entity to enhance the system so that we can correct some of these deficiencies that are within the system, because it really impacts on a lot of items that get to be reported in the system, such as your cost of sales and inventory. So if the system is not really able to keep a reliable data, but we are in the process of finding a service provider to enhance the project, the system, and we are envisaging that from the 1st of April 2022, we will be running on an enhanced system with this project. The other concern that was raised, I think it was with regards to the irregular expenditure and fruitless expenditure, I must say, in the current financial year, where we have detected these incidents, we report as we are required to report, but it has to go through the next stage of investigation. I think the AG has touched on that in terms of investigation. There's a next stage that follows is consequence management or disciplinary action, which one of the members also raised a concern about. Let me move on to the presentation. I hope I've covered some of the concerns that were raised, but if anything, I will get assistance with what I have missed out. But with regards to the presentation, the first slide talks to the overview of the financial of the entity. So here we're just giving a background in terms of how the budget for the entity is comprised. Mainly, we get a grant from National Treasury, and the entity is expected to generate additional income so that we can cover the operations and the running of the entity. But I must also just highlight that the grant that we are receiving is not sufficient alone to cover the salary cost. And for me, that is the biggest concern, because that is one of the unavoidable costs that we cannot run away from. So for as long as we are expected to achieve on the mandate of employing and providing work opportunities, that in a way attaches a permanent expenditure in terms of the salary cost. And if the grant that we are receiving from National Treasury alone does not even cover the salary cost, it already puts the entity in a financial constraint, because then we have to rely largely on the income that has been generated so that we can cover the rest of the salary expenditures as well as the operation and manufacturing overhead. So it was unfortunate that in the financial year, we only managed to collect about 41 million, as the CEO has indicated, and not enough. That alone with the grant was still not enough, and this is why we had to then approach the department in terms of seeing where they can substantiate for the salary cost. So they were able to do through the environment process bail out the entity with 25 million so that we can pay salary cost as well as the 17.5 million for the ICT infrastructure. The issue of Mpumalanga was one of the Mpumalanga factory is still one of the contentious issues that have to be put on hold because of the budget limitation. As I indicated that our expenditure, the biggest cost that drives the biggest cost driver for us is our salary bill as well as manufacturing overhead. So although we had budgeted in terms of the salary bill and the manufacturing overhead, based on the projection that we had done to say that we would possibly be able to collect about 200 million for revenue, which did not happen, the salary cost was not as high in terms of the budget. However, I must emphasize that these two expenses alone, they put the entity in a very constrained position in terms of the financials because the grant and the sales that were generated in 2021 was not sufficient. I can move on to the next slide. I think this is where I have touched on to say that we had expected to collect 200. The grant that we get is about 150 million. That managed to be increased with the bailout from the department to 175 million. The remaining that is showing under the collection is part of it is on the ICT infrastructure project that is still underway, as well as the part of it was earmarked for the salary increases in terms of the previous financial year where the adjustment had not been implemented on the system as yet. So we made provision for that so that when those are being adjusted on the system, we'll be able to meet the obligations. Interest, we're very optimistic when it comes to interest. Unfortunately, that is driven by how much one has in the bank. So we only managed to collect 1 million as opposed to the 15 million that we wanted to collect. The next slide talks to the expenditure alone. So here you will see the different pictures when you look at the expenditure. The factory salaries cost about 130. The budget was about 130. However, because of how the accounting framework mandates the entity to account for certain expenses, if you look at the factory salaries, it says we've only spent 19 million, but that is only because we are required in terms of accounting framework to indicate how much of the salary cost was involved in the production. And when you look at that, only 19 million was involved in the production. The rest had to be reclassified, and this is one of the findings that was raised by AG to say that we needed to reclassify the cost that was involved in the production under administrative. So if you look at administrative, it says admin support salary, it says 45 million on budget, but on expenditure it says 130. It's because we had to reclassify some of the statutory salaries that were not involved in production into administrative salaries. Our manufacturing costs, we budgeted 170 based on the fact that we needed to collect 200 million. However, the cost amounted to 48 million because then we only managed to collect 21 million of revenue. Operational costs remained a bit lesser because of the conditions that we were operating in terms of the COVID. But there's a need for us to augment this budget right now based on the fact that the economical activities are resuming and there is a expectation that we'll be incurring a bit of a higher operational cost. And one of the things that will increase the operational cost is because the Sheho is a rented factory. We are renting the Sheho, and as a result, we have to be paying rent on a monthly basis. And it's one of those costs that we will have will also increase, as well as the bills that we get for water for municipality services. On the next slide is the audit opinion. So for the 2020-2021, the entity got qualified audit opinion, and the areas of the key findings, and I think this is also one of the questions that was raised with regards to the recurring findings. If you look at the recurring findings, is the inventory and cost of sales, the underlying cost with regards to that is really the first one is the fact that our system is not, it has deficiencies within the system where the manufacturing allocation needs to be reviewed in terms of how we allocate our manufacturing overhead. The inventory as well, one of the underlying costs there is because the documentation that needed to be maintained for the runtimes that have been spent in terms of producing this inventory needed to be reviewed. We are currently in the process of reviewing all of these runtimes to check what we have on the system, does it correspond to what the documentation says. As I said, it's one of the biggest concerns, again, with regards to the recurring findings. And here, unfortunately, we're going to have to bite this for a little while because of the fact that the entity has a numerous manufacturing machinery that dated a long years before our existence. However, in terms of product requirements, we are required to assess the useful life of these machinery on a yearly basis. And that's where we have lagged in terms of checking the useful life of and the impairment. Because of the nature of this manufacturing machinery that we have. And what complicates it further is the fact that we've got old machines, we've got now the investment that went into the new machine. And when we do the assessment in terms of the graph requirement, we need to assess both in one bracket. And it will be very difficult because if you have a new machine, you can't put the same lifespan with the old machine. So this is an area that we require someone with expertise in terms of how to do the assessment of this useful life as well as the impairment or in terms of how long can we carry on with this machinery that were old and the ones that we currently have invested them have invested in that came into our factories. DG did touch on the services in kind. The biggest issue with the services in kind, in terms of we managed to resolve the accounting part in terms of the services that we received from the Department of Employment and Labour. However, we still have the biggest issue with regards to accounting for the facilities that we use throughout the factories. Throughout the factories. So in terms of PRAP, we are required to fair value these factories and put a market rent to these factories and disclose that figure. But what we have discussed and tried to also show to AG was the fact that these facilities belong to the public works. And at this point, the public works as a landlord was not able to provide us with the value of these properties or these factories that we are currently utilizing. As a result, we were not in a position to do a fair value market. However, we did engage public works. They have deployed a team where the valuators need to go on site and do the valuation of these properties. And once that has been done, they will be provided to us. Then from that base, we can start estimating in terms of the fair value market that can be placed on this facility. So it's one of those findings that we are following up with public works so that we can get the basis of the data that we can use. And as soon as we get those, we can utilize that and place market value. We did have some improvements on cash flow statement, which was one of the findings that were raised previously, and performance information, there were improvements on those as well. Okay, so this is just a summary of the findings in terms of the audit action plan. I must say that the fact that the audit was concluded very late in the financial year, in the new financial year, also had some constraints within our finance team as well. The progress as it stands, we are busy implementing some of these findings. The ones that still need a bit of more attention relates to the inventory as well as protocols and assets. We're just also indicating that some of these findings were raised by internal audits in terms of when they do the pre-review of the financials, as well as the some of the consolidated findings that are sitting in the management report. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you very much. Just the last point. There was a question whether SEE does have the qualified personnel to do the work that they're supposed to do. And you might have heard from the CFO that there are resources that are required to be able to do cost accounting. The entity has embarked on a process where the cost accounting expertise will be brought onto the fold, so that we do have those competencies in the entity. So I just wanted to add that aspect, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DJ. I think we'll then ask questions. And I hope, honourable members, you have also said that we have also included SEA because it's an entity which is within the department. I will then allow hands. Honourable Bagram.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It's Honourable Bagram, Honourable Nkonto, and it will be myself. You may shoot, Honourable Bagram.
I apologise for jumping in too early. Thank you for the report. It was interesting. I don't find it very believable, but so be it. Just in terms of, again, I'm going back to the consequence management, we know that they said that certain disciplinary hearings were held, certain people found guilty. They gave us this rundown of from what type, from management right down to the lower levels. I think it might be very important for us as a committee in terms of our oversight to have a look at the results of these disciplinary, especially maybe it's not fair to let us know the results of people who were found not guilty, but those that were found guilty, it would be important for us to see what they were found guilty of and what the punishment was and who they were. Because we know that in one particular instance at the UIF, there was the top management team was suspended, and we still don't know what actually transpired. And that's been, over a year ago. And there was all these sort of murmurings that they were doing things and suspending people on full pay and whatever. For all I know, they're still suspended on full pay, 16 months later. So can they share that with us? The other thing I do want to say is that they seem to do quite well in terms of percentages. There were reeling off figures such as 70%, 80%, 90%. It's all very well to judge yourself, and every year I say the same thing. You set the target, you then judge yourself, and you get 90%. It's a bit like me coming home after school and telling my mom I came third in a race. I didn't tell her that there were only three of us participating. So I don't know if that's going to be believable. And then finally, just in terms of the performance, it is trite that at least three of the entities have been absolutely dismal. And there's just no evidence of that at all. So maybe they should comment. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Honourable Nkonto.
Thanks, Chair.
Chair, maybe we have to start where the AG, from the AG's recommendations, that we need consistent monitoring, and we must make sure that there are remedial actions. These two reports just reminded me that we really have to do that. The first comment or question that I have is with regard to the performance of provinces under the same environment, under the same circumstances, their performance is not satisfactory. We can't have such a gap of percentage in terms of performance from the provinces, given the same environment and circumstances. It means there is underperformance in some of the provinces in the different quarters. And I'm just asking as to, because underperformance is a misconduct, what are the consequences or consequence management thereof? And then, Chair, there is a slide that is focusing on a misconduct identified amongst the officials in the department. Looking at what has been listed there, is internally focused. I think, Chair, we need to look at how does the department service the people, because in the offices of Polokwane, Giyani and Zanini, people sleep at the gates of the department's offices. They are told only 30 people are serviced per day. And if you are number 31, you are told that you have to go back home. They don't care how far have you traveled. Do you have money to go back? They just sent you back. And because people don't have money to go back and just come back the following day to be turned back again, they resort in sleeping at the gates of our offices, so that the following day, at least they are within the 30 that has to be serviced. Chair, it has been all over radio stations. It has been all over social media. I think it needs our attention. Maybe we have to visit those offices as this committee. And then, Chair, the last one will be on the SEE. I'm not going to say much about what they have presented, but I'm looking at the plan to turn those SEEs into them being providing essential services. We are told we are going to be with this pandemic for quite a long time. So what is the plan to ensure that these the SEEs are providing essential services? The last one, Chair, will be on when was this strategic plan that we are reported to today, when was it done, and when was it reviewed to be in line with the COVID-19 regulations? We need to get that, Chair, because reviewing of the strategic plan was very essential to make sure that the department perform under this COVID-19 environment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto.
there are no hands. I want to a question for the department on IT, the status of information with technology, the technology environment. There is something that has been raised there, which is quite challenging, the user account management and the program change management, those weaknesses that have been identified. I hope I have not missed that in your presentation in responding to that. Can you tell us how are you to correct those weaknesses? And which are the entities that are hard hit by this? The other one is I hope you have responded, I haven't missed it. You are, the AG has reflected that you don't have good practice in terms of laws that are governing procurement in terms of requirement of three quotations. Why, if I may just ask that, why it was that standard? Why should it be identified and picked up that you are not doing that? I really want to check on that. I'll pause there. And I want to, with all the criticism at times, that I think is unfair. You know, we must give credit where credit is due. SEE, yes, is not doing well. We know that there are some witnesses, but now they have employed people with requisite skills, not unless, and I must not get a sense that everything that is being tabled in front of us, we don't trust. Is it fair? Is it fair leadership that everything that is tabled here in front of us, we always downplay it? That's why I'm saying, in terms of SEE, with all its challenges that we know, and I think as the chair of this committee, I want to say, we will judge you as you move, as you come again on the work that has then been done, on the work that is to be produced by the two young people that you have employed in the SEE. The last one, can you be, DG, can it be clear, when are you finalizing the sexual harassment policy? It can be that you are still not you're not committing yourself on this under the broader theme or under the broader of the gender-based violence at the workplace, because that for me is very important. There are a number of workers that are mentally, I'm emphasizing this, mentally being destroyed because of this. So the policy, when, please give us time. It can't just that we have not yet finalized. And if we are not yet finalized, why? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm struggling to respond to comments made by Honorable Bagrain. And the reason why I'm struggling is that on a regular basis, we come to the committee, say to the committee, this is what we intend to do, given the limited resources that we have at our disposal. And I don't remember a single day when the committee says to us, go back, we don't want, or we don't like what you're saying to us. We don't like your targets. And the only thing that we can base our performance on is the strategic plan and APP that we presented to the committee. That was accepted by the committee. So that's why I have difficulties in understanding whether it is should we make it believable as a department or I don't know, Chair, but this is a report that we're presenting which has been audited, and I take it that if people believe what AG says, then they should believe the report, because this report is audited report from AG. With regard to consequence management, we would welcome the scrutinization of the documents that we have and who the people are and the sanctions that have been issued as a result of the disciplinary processes. And I do remember that when it comes to UIF suspensions, we came to the committee, we said to the committee, this is the status of the situation. And I do remember saying that once all the processes have been finalized, because we have to follow Labor Relations Act to the T, and we cannot short circuit the processes, otherwise we'll be found wanting. And being the Department of Labor, the Department of Employment and Labor, we have to be circumspect in terms of how we handle these issues. So the UIF suspension, the senior management at UIF were brought back. The chief director responsible for operations, there was nothing that she could be charged off, and we had to bring her back. The CFO, she had a number of things that she needed to answer for, and as a result of that, a disciplinary process was instituted. The commissioner of the UIF, we had to bring him back, but not at UIF, find him space in the department so that he's able to do some work up until the disciplinary process is over. I am told now that the disciplinary process is over, and we are waiting the report from the presiding officer so that we implement the recommendations from the disciplinary process. Well, I think we've done a presentation here. The SCE has indicated the reasons why in certain areas they've underperformed, and we have indicated reasons why we have not performed well in certain areas. And I mean, NEDLAC and CMA are still coming to present. And as I indicated earlier on, that when we come to the committee, we can only state the facts, not what we believe in. We can only state what is obtaining. And I think that both the department and the SCE, they've just done that. We are, and in fact, as far as I'm concerned, and with all things taken into consideration, the performance of the department is not dismal at all, given the situation that we find ourselves in. We're sitting at 67%, and we have consistently been above 80%, close to 90%. and the SEE, they could not do anything in the first part of the year, till the financial year, 2020, because of the known reasons relating to COVID. And I think the CFO, the CEO and the CFO, they have been at pains trying to illustrate the point that if this entity does not get contracts, there's just no way that they will even break even. They will always rely on the department to bail it out, because of, they said that whatever is allocated to them is not enough to cover their expenses. But then the second point that I want to make, when it comes to this purchase, sometimes I do get the sense, Chair, that the standard that we use to judge these entities is the same standard that that is used to judge other normal factories. These factories are employing people that mostly are intellectually challenged. And there are days where they don't work because they have to go through psychiatric, examination. And that definitely affects production. So for me, I've never expected the entities the factories to post, results that are beyond the expectation or beyond the capabilities of the people that are, working there, manufacturing the furniture and all other products that the factories do produce. So the least that we expect is that these entities will, because their purpose is to employ people who and provide opportunities to people who are disabled and mostly mentally challenged, and they will not be given opportunities elsewhere. On the consistent monitoring and remedial actions required with regards to the performance of provinces, given the fact that they operate under the same environment and circumstances, it's a very difficult issue to look at, because the provinces do not operate under the same environment and circumstances. The environments are completely different. And even though we give them, you'll see that the targets that are given to provinces are based on the resources that these provinces have. And that's the point that we often make when we come to the committee, that we will only set targets based on the available resources that we have. Beyond that, we would actually be lying to the committee and to ourselves to think that people can perform beyond that, which they have at their disposal. But we are taking steps to make sure that all provinces perform according to the set standards. And in fact, the COO issued letters to all the provinces that underperformed, warning the written warning to all the provinces that underperformed, and that's part of consequence management. So those are the steps that we are taking. With regards to misconduct that we've listed, which is internally focused, and the fact that there are people that sleep at our doorsteps because our offices are closing at 3, and I'm happy that the Honourable Member is mentioning the offices, that is Giani and Zanin. We'll investigate this, because as far as we know, we don't set a number of people that must be serviced or that must be serviced a day. So I don't know where the province, if this is true, where the province got the 30, a quota from, because that's definitely not what is in our service standards. That's not in our APP. So all what we require is that everybody who comes to our offices must be given the necessary services. But I do hope that given the fact that our numbers are published in the annual report, in the website of the department, that when people encounter these kinds of poor service, they will not hesitate to contact us. I mean, our offices are inundated with calls on a daily basis, so I appreciate it and we'll do something about it. What is the SC plan to ensure the factories provide essential service? We've always been positioning these entities as factories that must provide a service to government. And to this effect, we are assisting a number of hospitals, we're assisting Department of Basic Education. So we've always appealed even to the committee to assist us to make sure that we get these factories get the business that they require so that they're able to do the work that they're supposed to do. We have plans, but these plans will not work if opportunities are not provided to these entities so that they're able to provide the essential service that Honorable Nkondo is talking about. I didn't understand the question about when was the plan, or not the strategic plan revised to cater to take into account COVID-19. However, I can respond because I'm assuming that the Honorable Member is asking, given the fact that our performance from quarter one up until quarter four reflects the different levels with regards to lockdown. We developed a work from home policy that we shared with our employees, and that there is much more better monitoring of people that are working from home, because the reality is we're not out of the woods yet in terms of the pandemic. So we still have people that are working from home, and we'll have people that will work from home probably for the rest of our lives. But we need to find a mechanism to monitor them to make sure that service delivery is not compromised. So the working from home plan and the implementation of that is assisting us, and that's why we say that in the later part of the year, the performance improved from 25 in quarter one to 66% at the end of the financial year. When it comes to the user account management, Chair, what is not happening? Because this is a corporate services matter, is a human resource matter, is that when a person leaves, there's no interface, and I think AG put this nicely. There's no interfacing between what HR is doing and what IT is doing, in as far as clearing the system to make sure that when HRM effects the termination, immediately that termination is also effected on the IT system, so that the emails of the people that are leaving are removed from the system. So that's what the COO spoke about earlier on, that we're busy working on this thing so that it's corrected. That interfacing has got to be there. Chair, we've always requested pre-quotations. And I think the CFO is here, can just respond to this. There might be specific cases where, but I don't remember cases where we don't have asked for three quotations. We always ask for three quotations. The CFO will respond to this. When are we finalizing the sexual harassment policy? We will finalize it at the end of this financial year, Chairperson, on the 31st of, by the 31st of March 2022, we would have finalized the policy, because all what it requires now is just that we consult extensively, so that nobody will say we came up with a policy that affects everybody at the workplace, and yet there was no extensive consultation on the matter. But we are keen to make sure that this policy is finalized and is aligned to the code of good practice that we issued as a department on the issue of gender sexual harassment and violence at a workplace. CFO, can you deal with the supply chain issue? And that will be it. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, DG. Our policies and processes do require three quotations as stipulated in the procurement legislation. However, there are instances where with all your best efforts, three quotations can't be obtained, in which case our processes dictates that we document that. Unfortunately, we do work with human beings who at times don't follow what is prescribed. And in that case, it's a case of putting people through the necessary processes to remind them of what they need to do. So it's not that it's a deliberate act. It will be a human error which need to be corrected in a way that is documented in terms of putting consequence management. But in terms of our processes, it is there in terms of three quotations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Honorable members, I want to reflect on this in my history, and really you will pardon me. I think I was in my history as a member of this August House and a member of committees, I have never felt the way that I am feeling, because it touches into the integrity. It touches into the integrity of the leadership of this department, both politically and administratively. I don't think it was fair for the question of or remark that really was made by Honorable Baker. But well, it is his views, but it's challenging. It has got a broader ideological and political challenge. And I hope, and I'm appealing to members, when we are asking questions, we must understand that. And I want to emphasize this. I want to really emphasize, I am not implying that we must sugarcoat our sweetheart department. I'm one of those chairs that I will never allow that people are not taken into task on the weaknesses in the, but it's how you do it, how we do it, that is really a, I'm raising this because of, I was listening to the response of the DG, because we have never at one point told this department a door because of the quality of its work. We have never. I'm really appealing to members. Maybe I will be labeled as being emotional. Today, I am. Because it speaks volumes about the number of things that I will be accused of. maybe the minister at a particular time with this committee, in this committee, for the assistance of everybody in this house to really understand the challenges of this department in relation to where we are coming from and where we are and where we want to go for the benefit of the people of this country. I thought I must raise that because I had a view that would be seen as being controversial by the leadership of parliament, but I felt that I must really raise that. I am really, really sad and disappointed. Can we get the next presentation, which is NEDLAC?
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson. I'm just going to share my screen and just to indicate, Honourable Chairperson, that I'm joined here by the senior management of NEDLAC. Sorry, let me move to slideshow. Can you see it? Is it clear?
Yes, this is clear.
Okay, thanks. So I think that the reporting period was very much unprecedented, and our role as NEDLAC shifted drastically to respond to the COVID pandemic as well as the subsequent need to recover and reconstruct the economy. And this annual report reflects our progress in these areas, as well as the ongoing work that we've done in promoting social dialogue and inputting into policy and legislation. And I've put there quotes from the Honourable Minister indicating his view in the foreword about the role that we have played. So just as a highlight, in terms of the KPIs that we achieved, there was only one KPI that we did not achieve. So overall, our percentage achievement was 93%, and I'll talk to that later on in the presentation. I'm then just going to go to the achievements and challenges per program. Our first program is administration. And in this program, some of our achievements was the fact that we convened virtually an annual summit where, under the theme Social Compacting for Economic Recovery in the Time of COVID, where we also looked at pointers to the future, some issues that we have implemented in the course of this year. In fact, we had a number of executive council meetings, including two special meetings, which involved consultation between the social partners and the president. We also produced two monitoring reports on, in fact, what had happened with the NEDLAC reports and the bills that had been considered in NEDLAC on their way to parliament. And then we also started a review of a number of policies, including performance management, human resources, and asset management. Obviously, in the year under review, there were challenges. I think, the other departments have also had it, particularly the shift to working from home, and for our constituencies that they needed data so that they can attend meetings online. And there were also procurement processes that were slow. Maybe also just to indicate that in this period, we built a new strategic plan or revised strategic plan, and then consequently restructured the organization. In terms of the strategic plan, we have now see ourselves as focusing on three issues. One, building an effectible and accountable organization. Secondly, achieving significant collaboration between social partners on relevant and important socioeconomic issues. And thirdly, enhancing the capacity of our social partners. With the restructuring, we've reorganized NEDLAC around the core operations around two areas, one focusing on economic issues and the other on labor and development issues. We have a new post of a senior manager of corporate services, and we've also separated out our planning, budget, monitoring, reporting from the core operations. And we also reevaluated all jobs and benchmarked our salaries. Now, if I go to the second program, which is the heart of the organization, operations, I think, and I will talk about this in more detail, we engaged significantly on responding to the COVID pandemic. We are part of developing the Economic Recovery Action Plan and then the subsequently establishing policies, processes to track and collaborate on the implementation of the ERRP, commissioning research on the governance task team, and conclusion of two Section 77 notices. There were some challenges. The climate change bill, our deadline is that we should consider these issues in 6 months. The climate change bill took slightly longer than 6 months. There was also a lot of research conducted around comprehensive social security, and there were again delays there because it took longer than anticipated to sign off the research. And then the one indicator was not achieved. There was a requirement that there should be two reports from the job summit, but as I will explain also, you know, we pivoted this year from monitoring and implementing the job summit commitments to the much broader set of commitments responding to the economic crisis that we faced as articulated in the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan. In terms of responding to COVID, just before the end of the financial year, we set up a rapid response task team, and they looked at all those areas which I've listed there. And then since December, we met and we continue to meet every week or every second week with a work stream of the NAC joints to give and get feedback on government measures and escalate issues. So I'm going to detail some of these issues. The social partners spent an enormous amount of time on the COVID-19 TERS, both giving input into the wording of the directions to extend rights and improve functionality, to engage on extensions, and also to support and monitor the UI to ensure that operational and communication challenges were resolved, of which there were a number, including for foreign nationals. There was also a lot of other work done to support workers, informal workers, unemployed and distressed companies. In about April and May, there was engagement with the banks, medical aid companies, short-term lenders, pension and provident fund administrators so that there could be contribution holidays. There was engagement with social development on the extension of social grants and also support for delivery. There was engagement with the South African Local Government Association and the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs to protect informal traders in municipalities. There was, although it only happened in the next financial year, a Do No Harm directive so that informal traders were not even more adversely affected by the COVID pandemic. There was engagement with the Department of Small Business for assistance to small businesses. And there was significant engagement with National Treasury and the banks on the credit guarantee scheme. Then on health and safety, this again was a very important area of focus. There was input and drafting support for the health and safety direction. There were three revisions. A system was established by the National Institute for Occupational Health on workplace surveillance, which employers and workers participated in. There was distribution and promotion of behavioral change, communication materials, and towards the end of the period, there was significant engagement and input into shaping the government's vaccination program. And then in terms of opening up sectors, it feels like a distant memory now, but it was very important last year to make sure that as sectors opened up, it was safe, and to ensure that some sectors opened up like liquor. There was a lot of discussion about a liquor social compact, and even today there isn't agreement, but there was a lot of work to try and look at balancing the impact of lives and livelihoods, the negative health impact of alcohol use together with job and income losses through restrictions on the sale of alcohol. And there was also engagement on the opening up of local and international travel to support tourism recovery. Then in the transport area, this also wasn't necessarily that successful to have a safe travel direction so that there wasn't too much overcrowding in trains and in buses and taxis, but it wasn't successful, and as a result, organized labor were involved in a Section 77 socioeconomic protest. There was a lot of engagement with Prasa or Metro Rail to make sure that there was a safe travel and opening up of rail. And there was engagement on relief. Again, this was not successful in the period under review. Lastly, on protective personal equipment, and in the beginning, you will recall that there was a problem of security of supply, and there was a governance structure established in the DTRC to promote and enable local production, which was very successful. What was less successful and remains a challenge is engagement to ensure that government entities are compelled to procure from local producers. So that, Honourable Chairperson, is the key issues that were engaged upon in respect of COVID-19. On the economic recovery, in this slide, we just indicate what happened. On the 13th of August, the President asked NEDLAC to convene this Forum for Economic Recovery, where all social partners presented their plans, and it was agreed that senior leadership would draw up a set of priority actions. This was presented to the President on the 15th of September, and on the 15th of October, the President, as I'm sure you all know, announced the government's economic recovery and reconstruction strategy, which incorporated social partners' plans. And after that, NEDLAC set up processes and structures to track the implementation of commitments and collaborate in identified areas. And then the Presidential Job Summit comments were then integrated into the ERP commitments. And in the annual report, we have an annexure which sets out the key, the progress and the integration of the Presidential Job Summit commitments into the ERP commitments. So just a recap on the structures that were set up. There's an economic recovery leadership team, which is made up of the leaders, including cabinet ministers. There's a three-aside leadership team to deal with escalations and challenges. There's work streams on identified areas, and there's a process committee to process and manage the tracking of implementation and areas of collaboration. The areas of focus has been freight and public transport, the social compact to support Eskom and steps to improve energy security, localization, and improving the ecosystem for small business. Then just on the Presidential Job Summit, I think I already talked about the fact that there's a special report annexed to the annual report. The key areas of achievement signaled in that annexure is the signing of the social compact to support Eskom, the establishment of the temporary employee relief scheme. This is for retrenchment, this is not for COVID. Capitalization with UI funds of the Productivity SA Business Turnaround Solution. I'm sure you'll hear more about that later. Boosting and monitoring localization, including through tender monitoring, which is done by Proudly South Africa. Prioritizing industrial financing, including in special economic zones of the DTRC. Introducing a blended finance model for emerging farmers by the Department of Agriculture, Land and Rural Development. Promoting master plans, especially in clothing, textiles, footwear, auto and furniture, mostly arranged through the DTRC. Escalating jobs in business processing. Establishment of the Presidential Climate Change Commission. Supporting regulatory certainty on e-visas, unabridged birth certificate and critical skills, the last issue which is still ongoing. And supporting the development of pathway management, I think also which has a home in the Department of Employment and Labour. Then I'm now moving on to the other ongoing work of NEDLAC. In the year under review, you can see that we hosted a number of social dialogues, special sessions, webinars, etc., and including four meetings chaired by the President. I'm not going to go through them all, but you can see that they addressed a range of issues. Probably the most extensive one was the Six Future of Work webinars, which was done in partnership with the International Labour Organization. Then in terms of the completed reports on policy and legislation, there were four on policy, mostly relating to agriculture, three on policy, mostly relating to agriculture and fisheries. And on legislation, there was the climate change bill, the upgrading of land tenure rights amendment bill, the basic education laws amendment bill, and the expropriation bill. There is still a number of ongoing work that happened in the period, but it's ongoing. In terms of the comprehensive social security and retirement forms task team, they concluded 5 reports. One which is about the establishment of a national social security fund so that everybody would have a pension whether or not they have a private pension. Obviously work on the basic income grant, and then also looking at reforms within the existing retirement funds. Then there was also a task team to looking at extending the UI to atypical workers. This was given momentum due to the fact that atypical workers like musicians and so on could not access the COVID TERS. Improving the functioning of technical infrastructure agencies. These are linked to the DTIC relating to, for example, standards. Improving the stability of the South African Revenue Services, oversight over the ILO Decent Work Country Program. And then we have a demarcation standing committee, which is when there are demarcation awards by CCMA about whether a company is part of this bargaining council or that bargaining council, and they processed a number of awards. Then just in terms of the Section 77 processes, there were, in the period under review, there were 2 concluded, one from COSATU on economic crisis and another one from organized labor I referred to earlier on the public transport challenges associated with the COVID-19. At the end of the period in review, although these are now both considered, violent crimes in the Western Cape and from SAFTU, the defense and process promotion of socioeconomic interests of workers and the working class in general. I'm now going to move on to the annual financial statements. Here is our statement on financial progress. I think it is relatively self-explanatory, although you can see that we do have a surplus, and that's mostly as a result of the fact that a large part of our budget previously was used to fund accommodation, travel, venues, catering, and so on. And because we pivoted 100% online and all our meetings were online, these funds were not spent. We have, however, in this financial year, sought a way to meaningfully spend these funds. In terms of the AG's report, we received an unqualified audit with findings. There were really 2 key findings. The one related to irregular expenditure, and I think this might have been clarified earlier on, but there, I think, were 7 or so tenders which were advertised. There was competitive processes. It was open and transparent. But after we had awarded the tender to, for example, Ilanga Travel Agent, we didn't put an advert in the Government Gazette that said, we have awarded this tender to this travel agency. And that is why the expenditure is irregular. However, we will apply to National Treasury to condone that so that the expenditure will become regularized. We've done that in respect of our previous year's irregular expenditure. And then we had wasteful and fruitless expenditure of 193,000, which related to the fact that interest, because we paid SARS late. And I think I've explained previously to this committee that there was the previous CFO was dismissed by the organization, and he held the key to us accessing SARS, and it was quite a struggle to be able to, for us to gain control of our access, our own independent access to SARS. And then just to indicate also that we've taken remedial action in relationship to these findings, and we had no findings in respect of performance information. So just really, Chairperson, in conclusion, we would like to extend our appreciation to the social partners, as well as to the Department of Employment and Labour, for their support and partnership in strengthening social dialogue and partnership during the last financial year. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, EJ, Ms. Lisa, Chef Kat, I hope I'm pronouncing your surname correct.
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Honorable members, there is the presentation, but we must also, in asking questions, we must also take into account what has been reflected in the AG's report. Thank you very much. I will see hands. Honorable Kado. Mm-hmm. Honorable Kado. Honorable Mkondo. Honorable Kado. Okay, let me do this. Honorable Kado, Honorable Mkondo, Honorable Dabe, and Honorable Nonsense. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My question, as usual, relates to the governance task team that was set up in 2017. I see that you did mention in one of your slides that there is a restructuring process underway. And my question is whether this restructuring process is related to the review of NEDLAC's statutes and protocols that was undertaken in terms of that governance task team set up in 2017. I know when last you briefed us, you had mentioned that an ILO mistress study had been conducted and that they had produced a research report with recommendations that was going to be presented to your governance task team. I would like to know whether there are other recommendations besides those that might have possibly manifested in this restructuring process. Then I would also like to know more about this statement where you mentioned there will be a reevaluation of all jobs and benchmark salaries to public entities of a similar size and scope of work. And the reason I ask is that I see on your final slide, I think it is, that NEDLAC's personnel expenditure is almost 50%, 49% in fact, of your revenue. And is it still the case that your average personal costs per employee are so high? I think at one stage it was in the region of 800,000 Rand. And if so, what is being done to tackle the situation? Then thirdly, you talk about the reorganization of corporations into two units, one focusing on economic issues and the other on labor and development issues, with a new post of senior manager corporate services. My question is, why have you decided to run the development issues with the labor issues as opposed to grouping the economic stream with the development stream? Surely development speaks to much more than simply labor issues. And then finally, to what extent has NEDLAC been engaged in the discussions on the basic income grant? We know that there was some sort of furore when the social development minister came out with proposals on retirement funds and so forth, that NEDLAC had been sort of sidelined before the publication of those proposals, which were subsequently withdrawn. So my question is, what sort of engagements are going on around the basic income grant in NEDLAC? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kado, Honorable Mkondo. Honorable Mkondo.
Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
I was muted. I muted myself, Chair. I'm sorry. Chair, with the opening and the economic recovery plan, understand all what has been mentioned there, but then there is this research on job losses and sales of alcohol and the sales and the restrictions of the sales. I hope I'm not going to be controversial with this one, but I'm asking myself why alcohol only, because we all know that South Africans were complaining that the temporary banning of cigarettes was allowing the increase in illicit cigarettes entering our country, and according to those who were doing research by that time, they said the country was losing hundreds of millions, if not billions, because of that cigarette temporary banning. So I'm asking, Chair, why didn't this research of NEDLAC also concentrate on that, if it was really a backdrop to our economy? And then to the restructuring of the organizational restructuring, what are the shortcomings that have been identified, and what does NEDLAC aspire to achieve at the end of the day? Thank you, Chair.
Sorry for that. Are you done, Honourable Kondo, or we have lost you?
I'm done, Chair. Thank you.
Sorry for that. Honourable Mugabe.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. My question is in relation to the Auditor General's report that was presented earlier on. In relation to the status of internal controls, NEDLAC was identified as not having, as an area of concern, the issue of proper record keeping. Secondly, the issue of review and monitor compliance, which required the intervention. Any comment or the matter has been addressed in the management's letter that was issued by the Auditor General, if that concern can be clarified. Thanks, Chair. I'm done, Chair.
Are you muted, Chair?
Sorry, I'm also, thank you, Honourable Nosele.
No, Chair, I was going to say no, because the question was also going to talk to the report of the AG on the issues that Honourable Mtabe has raised with regard to the management letter contents. But also, I think we should also take the opportunity to congratulate the NEDLAC on the job well done, particularly on the areas relating to the interventions and the facilitations that were made for social partners to conclude agreements that have led to the finalization of the key areas around the reconstruction and recovery plan. So in that regard, I think I will wait for the response that already has been covered by Honourable Mtabe. Thank you, Chair. Are you with us, Chair?
I am with you.
Okay.
I don't know what's happening with my... No, thank you. EJ, you can respond. Please respond to those.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Chair, and to Honourable Members for those important questions. I will just answer them in the order in which they were asked. The first question asked by Honourable Carter related to the work of the Governance Task Team and whether the restructuring process is in response to that. So the restructuring was in response to revising our strategic plan. And we revised the strategic plan together with the social partners to respond to the current conjuncture, particularly the changes that came about due to the COVID pandemic and the economic and the consequential economic crisis. However, when we did the strategic plan and when we did the restructuring, we were mindful of the fact that there is still a bigger look at the NEDAC Act and Constitution and protocols. And we also indicated both in the strategic plan and in the restructuring proposals that this might be work in progress, that there's some flexibility if there are further changes that would be made. But I'm sure that the members would agree that faced with all these changes in our society, in our economy, we couldn't just continue with business as usual. This is not. There has been further progress on the governance task team, not in the year, in the period that we're now talking about, but subsequently, the ILO MISTRA research report was presented. There was a workshop with stakeholders. Subsequently, there was two progress reports to our executive council, and we are now in the progress of starting to look at the devil in the detail, the amendments to the NEDAC Act, Constitution and so on, which I'm sure we can give a more detailed report when we report quarterly. Then in terms of the reevaluation of the jobs, so maybe just to recap, because this question was also asked last year, the reason why our salary budget was very big, it's because we had introduced retirement benefits. So when we introduced the retirement benefits, there was a once-off increase to accommodate that. At the moment, our average salary of staff in the new structure is 752,000 inclusive of retirement and medical aid benefits. Yes, our salary budget is 50% of our overall budget, and particularly that's really because we don't have a capital budget, we don't do infrastructure spending, we don't do projects. Most our work revolves around staff having to facilitate meetings. And as I indicated earlier on, our accommodation and travel and catering costs have gone down significantly because we are operating online. I think you will find this phenomenon now with all government entities which have moved to online working. Then there was the question about why didn't we put economics and development together? To be honest, there's different ways of cutting this pie. And just in terms of the way NEDAC has shifted, there is a lot of work that we now do around the economy, which maybe we weren't previously doing. And we just thought about in terms of an equal division of labor, it would be preferable to put these two areas together. There are a number of, the overlap works both ways, but we have found a lot of synergies, particularly around issues of skills development, which are development issues, and also labor market issues. So the issue of the basic income grant is also not in the period under review, but NEDLAC did conclude a NEDLAC report on comprehensive social security, including a view on the basic income grant. And then before the department issued the green paper. So the NEDLAC report was focused on the green paper. As members know, the green paper was subsequently withdrawn. And there is a commitment from the social partners at NEDLAC to continue to engage as the department brings back reviewed policies. There will be ongoing engagement on this important matter. In terms of the question raised by the Honourable Mkhonto,
So in NEDLAC, you know, it isn't the secretariat that initiates issues. It's issues initiated by the social partners. And for whatever reason, business or the cigarette industry didn't come to NEDLAC and say, we want you to fight our cause. In fact, I think they went to court and there was litigation. In respect to the liquor industry, parts of the liquor industry did try litigation, while other parts of the liquor industry, such as Distell and the Beer Association of South Africa, they decided to come and engage, you know, at NEDLAC on this issue. Then if the second question raised by Honorable Mkhonto was on the shortcomings, what shortcomings were we trying to address? I think I did refer to that earlier on where we couldn't continue with business as usual. What do we aspire to achieve? I think that we wanted to be more effective, and I think we want to be more professional, and we want to make a bigger distinction between the staff in NEDLAC that are doing, you know, that are professional and facilitating and inputting and supporting processes of social partners, and other people that would make sure that the organization functions effectively, that there is good governance, that there is proper corporate services, there's proper digitalization support. And I think it is bearing dividends, although we're still in the process of finalizing all the appointments in the new structure. Honorable Ndabe, the issue of the status of internal controls and proper record keeping, I think there has been a very significant shift, and that is reflected in the annual report and annual financial statements in respect of the administration and internal controls in NEDLAC. Since this was identified by the AG, I think in 2019 and so on, we had a CFO from, I think, April 2019 until November 2020, who did a lot of work putting a new basis in NEDLAC around financial management. And then we also have another CFO, Farhan Samsudin, who started in February, and again, together with the restructuring, has led to a significant improvement in internal controls. We also have a very active audit and risk committee. We have internal auditors. We monitor this through an external audit action plan, and the internal auditors have just completed a follow-up audit where 75% of the issues have been resolved. And we've also just completed a financial discipline audit. We are in the process of doing management comments there. So I feel very comfortable that we are strong now on internal controls. Obviously, you know, this is always an area of strengthening and ongoing monitoring. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I have addressed all the issues.
Thank you, TG. I'm just checking. Honorable Nonsana, is it an old hand or is it a new one? Honorable Nonsana, maybe it's a legacy hand. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we that was then the last presentation for this morning. We will then, I hope members did receive the notice that we are continuing after plenary, and I'm humbly requesting that members do find a way of locking in, because we are immediately going to continue after plenary. And thank you very much,
Minister DG and Ms. Kay and the Office of the Auditor General, which we will appreciate if you can join. We'll speak with Mr. Sakaza to give you the link for the evening meeting, because we are then going to do CCMA Productivity SA. Am I correct, Mr. Sakaza? I think I am.
That's correct, Chair, yeah.
Okay. Now, thank you very much, honorable members. Let's break for lunch, and then we'll meet in the evening. Sure.
Excuse me, Chair, can I just indicate that we'll use the same link?
Everyone can log out
now, and they will just log in back with the same link. Thank you. Okay. Is it possible to send it again?
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, fine. I think he can do that.
If possible.
Send it again to you. Oh, okay. No, fine. All right.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.